Okay, welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with Irish Republican Labour activist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. Trump and Biden decide to cancel their scheduled TV debate, instead heading out on rallies where they can both say what they want with no embarrassing questions getting in the way. What now passes for democracy in one of the greatest put-up job double Muppet elections of all time. But back this side of the pond, and another picture entirely. The UK stands up to the lies with evidence of COVID test fraud and the views of the Welsh outside their Cardiff Parliament in glorious sunshine on Sunday. The pandemic profiteers ramping up the false positives to justify more and more millions of our money. They're called Serco. They've done it many times before. They have had to pay hundreds of millions in fines for fraud. For example, when they were charging us for prisoners' tags when the prisoners were dead or had been released. But they didn't count on Bournemouth-based investigative journalist and MC Lance Murdoch, otherwise known as MCLL. We'll be hearing his forensic look at the world's biggest COVID fraudsters, Serco. Their links to Buckingham Palace through the shadowy Purbright Institute, which also controls a privatised defence evaluation and research establishment that's Kinetic, into drones and goodness knows what else these days, a privatised version basically owned by the Crown. And we hear one of his tunes, Don't Believe Me. Not only that, an exclusive interview with Lance about his COVID awakening, ending with a focus on the Great Reset and what to expect. And as the UN General Assembly closes, whatever that was, about 10 days ago, and postponed from last week, we hear one of Colonel Gaddafi's last speeches from 2009. What an interesting and amazing guy he was. Rather echoes with much of what we talk about on this programme. Also, you may have heard of Grand Master of Scottish Rite Freemasons and the United States, Albert Pike, back in the American Civil War, set up a plan for wars and revolutions to bring about a world revolution, three world wars and one totalitarian government. Webster Tarpley this week on his counterpart, who he formulated the plan with over in Italy, and who invented the mafia, by the way, a guy called Giuseppe Mazzini. But Martin, I think we better start with the looking at the COVID from an international point of view this week. There are these various groups popping up, particularly in Europe and particularly in Germany, but also all over the place, of doctors who are now saying, actually, we don't agree with the official Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance and the rest of the World Health Organization type agenda, really. What they're saying is that this is still going. Many of these doctors are saying the opposite.
Well, I mean, there's obviously a spread of opinion here. Some people are saying some people are saying that COVID is less dangerous than some people are saying. Others are saying that it is. They're against
lockdowns.
What
do you think?
Well, I'm listening to what everybody has to say. The mainstream is clearly still not agreeing with them. I mean, the great Barrington people, and of course they're linked to the American Enterprise Institute, which is a right-wing economic think tank.
Well, they were funded by them. They're not actually linked.
Well, I know, but I mean, they were.
Hang on a minute, because I read this thing. You were talking about Nafees Ahmed's book. Article about this. And they've had some funding from this organisation, but you can't launch anything really without some funding, without some money behind it.
No.
And in fact, they didn't get a lot of money off them either.
No, but the point is that they have got a view. And of course, they're also, I mean, let's be clear. Some people are saying that we should go for herd immunity. Now, the fact is that most people in the society do not accept that as a strategy. And it's not been accepted by the British government.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think quite a lot of people do think that that's a good idea.
No, but
of confusion about it. Anyway, just looking briefly at international news, the Americans this week have been steaming, in fact, just yesterday, a warship through the Taiwan Strait. Is this the idea here over in the South China Sea, which, by the way, I think our warships are there too, that is to just really just try and cause a bit of trouble between Taiwan and China in order to say, well, if to the Chinese, if you're thinking of attacking Taiwan, you're going to have to attack our warships, American warships first?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look around, you will see that the US, with Britain in tow, is provoking the Russians, the Chinese and the Iranians simultaneously. And we're very much closer to war than people realise. And if one breaks out, then people shouldn't be surprised.
You've been saying that for a long time. Why now rather than the last 10 years?
Because the banking system's collapsed, Tony. and they need a cut. That, you know, it's what
Tarpley calls. Cash points are still working. Well, they were earlier on.
At the moment, yes. I mean, it's, hang on, Martin.
It's what they call
flight forward.
You've been saying this for a long, long time, and surely, I mean, you're in danger of being, you know, me pointing the finger now and saying you've been crying wolf.
Well, the war in Nagorno-Karabakh is because the Turks have been put up to it. I mean, Prigozhin, who's an oligarch close to Putin, is saying the Americans are behind this. And of course,
why is Pompeo this week criticising Turkey's role in the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict then?
Well, there's a lot of people are trying to analyse what's going on there. You've got local antagonisms between the two main protagonists.
Let's be clear about where this is. It's in between Russia and Iran. So you've got in the South Caucasus. So you've got really a potential war taking place between Russia and Iran. Russia and Iran are potential allies. In fact, to a large extent, they are allies.
Yep.
So the idea of actually starting a war right in between those two countries is likely to divide them, isn't it?
Well, what it does is it creates problems for the Russians. Now, the Russians managed
for the Iranians.
Yes.
With one of their major allies. Yes. There's a war between them and them.
And they are, and don't forget that Azerbaijan is in alliance with Israel, and of course because they've got a border with Iran, Israeli Air Force planes based in Azerbaijan will be able to attack Iran very easily if they decide to go to war with Iran. And that's another aspect of this that hasn't really been understood. And of course, in the Mediterranean, the Turks and the Greeks are facing off. But one positive thing this week is that the Russians were able to get both the Azeris and the Armenians to Moscow and agreed a ceasefire. But then that ceasefire broke down almost immediately. The current government in Yerevan, which is in Armenia, are much less pro-Russian than the previous government. They've been colour revolutioned, and the guy who's in charge now is more pro-Western.
So we've also got conflict in the Ukraine, in the Donbass, in eastern Ukraine, right on Russia's border. We've also got all the tensions in North Korea. This is
and
just
the tensions
another
in
one.
Belarus.
And this is another one to add to those,
yes,
isn't it?
And then we've got the South China Sea, the Taiwan Strait. We've got, Iran, Iran in the Gulf.
Lebanon too.
Lebanon too. Yes, they're under sanctions because the West is trying to drive Hezbollah from out of the government there, and they seem to be going for broke on every level.
Is the idea here that we get a lot of minor conflicts going, spark maybe one or two of them, and we'll get a major conflict?
Yeah, well, William Engdahl's got a very good piece this week in New Eastern.
He is the man. He is the man. Let it be said.
What we've got here is the simultaneous. I mean, basically, they're trying to destabilize Russia, China, and Iran. They are the main enemies as far as the Western Zionist Western alliance are concerned. And, you know, Iran's suffering terribly from COVID. They're into a third wave there now. Lots of people are dying. They've got sanctions on all of their banks. 18 private sector banks have been sanctioned. They're finding it very difficult to get hold of emergency medical supplies. And the whole situation is drifting rapidly towards confrontation. And, of course, any mistake could easily lead to, I mean, you know, the Russian and US soldiers are basically, running into each other in northern Syria all the time.
Okay, so let's just have a look at William Engdahl for a minute. I mean, am I right in thinking he's kind of half German, half Russian?
No, he's half German and half American.
Oh, but he speaks Russian, doesn't he? Russian.
Yeah, he's, people need to read his stuff and make their own mind.
I'll put a link up on our show page at thisweek.org.uk. It's the New Eastern Outlook journal that he's on, and if you look there for author / William - Engdahl, ENG DAHL, not the easiest word to spell, you'll find some of his latest articles. Martin, one of them is looking at MBS. He's saying Twilight in the Desert for Saudi and MBS. It appears as if Saudi de facto ruler Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is on a mission to destroy the world oil giant by one after the other. Ill-conceived economic decisions, now MBS orders yet new desperation cuts in Saudi oil prices. His economy is imploding from all sides, from the stupid Vision 2030 plan to even the traditional oil sector. So he's really saying that things are not looking good for Saudi at all.
No, and of course the other thing, I was talking about the article that I've read that article, but the other one there is a concerted attempt to pressurise Russia. So you've got Belarus, you've got the situation in Ukraine.
Let me just come to that in a minute, because he's done another article as well. These are his most recent three. The Gates vaccine spreads polio across Africa. He's looking at Microsoft founder Bill Gates, who's made himself the global vaccine czar. But his foundation has been spending billions on spreading new vaccines globally, while much attention has been given to the role of Gates behind the corrupt World Health Organization. What about Gates pursuing an oral polio vaccine across Africa, which has actually been spreading polio? So although most of the natural kinds of polio have been banished by whatever means over the years, this is a new kind. The vaccine is actually spreading it.
Yeah, I mean, Engdahl, people, he's got a wide oeuvre, and people need to read it. Some of the stuff he comes out with, I don't necessarily agree with. Other stuff I find quite convincing.
Okay, so this article you're talking about
is a useful person to read.
He's extremely good, I think, one of the best. And RAND and the Malevolent Encirclement of Russia.
That's the one I'm talking
about. This is the RAND Corporation. Over recent weeks, he says, a series of events in the states surrounding the Russian Federation has erupted that certainly are not being greeted with joy in the Kremlin. Each crisis centre of itself is not a definitive game changer for Russian security. But taken together, they suggest something far more ominous is unfolding against Moscow. A recent RAND study prepared by the US Army suggests so. He's saying, who are the RAND Corporation and why might they be behind some sort of plan to destabilise Russia, encircle Russia, threaten Russia and possibly even topple Putin?
Well, the RAND Corporation have been around for quite a long time. They started in the 60s. And they are basically, you know, a think tank, supposedly research and development is what RAND stands for, I think. And, you know, they're basically a deep state organisation in the US, which, you know, plots to dominate
the world. Take over the world. That's right, the RAND Corporation, yeah. Around about the same time, actually, as Ayn Rand was around.
I mean, there is some connection.
I think they were both founded within a couple of years or whatever. Well, her first book was published the same year as the RAND Corporation.
Yeah. Well, I don't think the word I think it's a coincidence that RAND and RAND are the same. I don't think there's any linkage there. But okay, of course, yes, she would certainly have been one of the people that would have been influential in
okay,
the RAND.
Well, it's a pity you're not that keen on the COVID articles by William Engdahl. So I think they're excellent. And I'll put a link up to that on our show page at thisweek.org.uk. Very interesting to see the way that the Russians are being encircled, and really rather worrying. So I thought we'd start our second section this week with a look at over to the continent, because there's this new organisation. There are various of them now, and this new one is called Doctors for Truth, and it's Dr. Elke de Klerk, who's the founder we'll hear from first, followed by one of my favourite doctors, the epidemiology professor, the Irish woman, Dolores Cahill.
Hello, I'm Elke de Klerk from the Netherlands, and I want to state that we do not have a medical pandemic or epidemic. We also state that COVID-19 should not be on list A for any longer, because we now know that it is a normal flu virus, and the normal flu virus isn't on list A. So we are also starting a lawsuit to the state of the Netherlands to bring this in with a large group of doctors and a really large group of nurses also, because we have contact with 87,000 nurses that do not want the vaccine that is being prepared for us. I want to state, if there is no pandemic, I am wondering why our kids are in schools with masks. There's absolute constitutional rights, and they cannot be infringed or inflicted for any medical reason. There's no reason for panic. Also in the medical practice, there's no reason for panic. The panic is created by these false positive PCR tests. 89% until 94% of those PCR tests are false positive. They don't test for the COVID-19, and also the rest is false negative. So we have to look at clinics. We have to start looking at clinic. Medical doctors have to stop looking at those tests. That's very important. Let's go back to the clinics and to the facts. We have in the Netherlands now the regular press publishing the news that the PCR test is not a correct test. So I'm very happy about that. So there is hope. Thank you.
Statistics have come out that up until April 2020, there was zero deaths in Ireland. These are the official statistics from the CSO, the Central Statistics Office. The first death was in April. And in the whole country in 2020, we have 98 deaths out of 5 million people. So in Ireland, 30,000 people die every year, 10,000 from cardiovascular disease, 10,000 from cancer. The 98 deaths in Ireland are preventable if they had been given prevention and treatment. And we see now that probably there will be thousands more deaths in Ireland just from cancer.
So that's Dolores Cahill there finishing off. She's obviously part of this Doctors for Truth organisation, started on the continent in the Netherlands by the founder there, Dr. Elke de Klerk. Now, the point, Martin, here is not necessarily arguing with what they're saying, but the fact that we're getting almost zero. In fact, I haven't seen any of this sort of stuff on the mainstream press at all. These are qualified doctors. They're speaking out. They're actually possibly risking their jobs too. And yet we're not hearing anything about what she's saying. There is 85 to 94% of these PCR tests could be false positives.
Well, that's a claim, isn't it? I mean, the question is it true? I mean, other people are saying different things.
Well, she's a doctor. She's quite qualified to say that sort of thing.
Yeah, but
we're not. Why are we? I mean, this is the main point, isn't it? Why is the mainstream press censoring people like her?
Well, I mean, in a nutshell, one of the things you do with a pandemic is you try and control the narrative about what's happening, so that everybody knows, you know, this is what we'd like you to do, folks. So there's a system for, you know, deciding how to tell people what to do. And up to now, the government has been listening to the mainstream academics who have been telling them what to do. But of course, in science, like everything else, there are going to be different views. And these people have got a different view. And of course, you could argue, well, we don't want to. You see, of course, the big tech giants are saying, well, we're going to push these views to the margin because they undermine the messaging of the government. About, you know,
aren't we in danger here of having media, news media, journalism, current affairs, that it's actually mimicking advertising? So the idea is that people with an axe to grind are pushing their specific message, selling an idea, selling a narrative, the same sort of thing as we got immediately after the September the 11th attacks.
Well, yes, of course. But I mean, if let's just say for the sake of argument, there was another pandemic, not this one, a different one. You would probably expect, and you would see it all over the world, that governments will give you a clear message of what they think is happening and telling people what they want them to do. And so, for example, in China, that's what they told people: there's a pandemic, this is what we're doing, we're locking Wuhan down, we're testing everybody, we want everybody to do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, that's, they don't want other people coming in and X, Y, and Z
can be all sorts of infringements of civil liberties. That's the point. Let's have a listen now to someone who's not a doctor, but she is someone I trust. Her name is Catherine Gunn, and she was the star of the film at the beginning of this year, Official Secrets. And she was also the whistleblower back in 2003 that blew the whistle on the Iraq war and was largely responsible for making it an illegal war, because by blowing the whistle, she got some information from the United States in her job down the road in Cheltenham, where they were trying to fix the Security Council vote at the UN. And by getting that information out, that Security Council vote was not fixed, but she had to wait several weeks, either nail-biting weeks, for the, I believe it was the Observer, to publish it. And since the Observer did publish it, that publication has gone right downhill. But anyway, I thought it'd be interesting to ask Catherine what she made of Dr. Yeadon, his claims. That's the guy from Pfizer, who's been talking about massive numbers of false positives coming out of the PCR test, and the COVID situation generally.
They cancelled schools here, just like they did in the UK, and everybody went home and everybody locked up. And, you know, everybody believed at the time, okay, we're just going to do this for a couple of weeks. You know, my daughter here was under the impression that school would go back in a couple of weeks. And everything was meant to just kind of, let's just wait until this thing blows over, until it sort of calms down a little bit. And they've just dragged it out and on and on and on, despite the fact that all the data is showing now that we peaked in middle of March, the infection rates peaked in March, the peaks of deaths peaked in early April. And ever since then, it's been going down and down and down. And Dr. Yeadon, he intimated that the Ofcom, basically at the start of the declared pandemic, sort of Ofcom sent out a coronavirus broadcasting type of guidelines, which basically, you know, prevented TV, radio, and print media from challenging what was coming out of number 10, what was coming out of SAGE, what was, you know, coming out of WHO, a World Health Organization. So that, you know, that's extraordinary, isn't it, to think that Ofcom would literally basically put parameters around a scientific debate and say we're not allowing any sort of discussion on this.
Well, I mean, we were subject to that Ofcom ourselves, and our station manager chose to take us off the air in Bristol, even though it's only a little tin pot community radio station with a decent audience, though, I must say, amongst the opinion formers and politicians, etc., in the city. But if you look at the actual guidance that was put out by Ofcom, it was really just saying basic stuff about medical accuracy. It wasn't saying anything specifically about you must trot out the government line. But it was saying that if, you know, you're making statements, which don't go along with medical accuracy, that you were likely to get sanctioned by Ofcom. Now, the irony of all this is, of course, that much of the guidance that was being given by government, such as to clear hospitals and move people without being tested into care homes, was actually horrendously bad medical advice, which possibly led to the deaths, probably led to the deaths of thousands of people unnecessarily. So
the premature deaths, which caused the so-called peak. And I think at this stage, you know, finally, I think a lot of medical professionals were very cautious about speaking up at the beginning because they themselves didn't want to be seen to be negligent or you know, saying anything that was possibly harmful to others. But, you know, we've now had at least there's four that I've counted now, four different independent sort of declarations by a community of doctors around the world. So first off, there was Doctors for Open Debate, which was a Belgium initiative. And they got 622 medical doctors to sign their letter, and 1,991 medically trained professionals to sign it. But that, I shared that on Facebook, that Doctors for Open Debate, and of course that got fact checked. And on their letter they said, so I quote, they say, there is no medical justification for any emergency policy anymore. Current crisis management has become totally disproportionate and causes more damage than it does any good. So that came out about a month ago, I think, at least a month ago. Then we have more recently the Barrington Declaration. And I just checked their website. They now have 25,269 medical practitioners who've signed, 9,500 medical and public health scientists, and over 450,000 citizens who have signed. And then there's an Australian initiative that has also started a petition and a letter. And they say in their letter, let me just see what I've written down here. They're called the Australian COVID Medical Network. They say many Australian doctors and other health professionals consider the lockdown measures to be disproportionate and the case of widespread suffering for many Victorians and the cause, sorry, of widespread suffering. Thereby, we, in solidarity with thousands of international doctors, call for the cessation of all disproportionate measures that contravene the international Syracuse principles. Now, I haven't heard of the Syracuse principles, but basically they lay it out for you. Number one, it is part of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Number two, it is recommended by the WHO. Number three, it requires all public health management policies to meet standards of legality, evidence-based proportionality, and recognize our basic and non-derogable human rights. And finally, there's the German doctors who have another organization that I think hopefully all these groups will come together and work together. It's called the World Doctors Alliance. So I think finally, you know, we're getting a measure of how much opposition there is now to what government scientists and government public health figures are saying.
Well, it's interesting. She uses the term government scientists, government public health officials. That's the former GCHQ whistleblower, bless her, who was very instrumental in making the Iraq war illegal by blowing the whistle about the American attempts to fix the vote at the UN Security Council back in 2003. She's saying there, Martin, that, you know, there are all sorts of organisations now coming together to oppose this. But, you know, in the gist of what she's saying is that although we're seeing these government figures, these are the people that have been trotted out on television, actually there's all sorts of other interests behind them, not least of which at the World Health Organization is the Gates Foundation. And as governments around the world have found it difficult to fund things, these private interests have really taken over.
Well, I hear what they've got to say, and if there's enough of a groundswell amongst medical practitioners, then they will win the argument, won't they? But of course, there are other medical practitioners, as we know, many of them employed by governments, who don't agree with the analysis that we've just been hearing. As a non-medical person, I listen to what everybody's saying, and I'm just, you know, it's like lots of other things. If you're not a specialist, you've got to, to some extent, defer to the people who are.
Okay, well, no, Catherine Gunn is not a specialist, but she's very good at detecting where someone might be trying to start a war or do that sort of thing. And she's a fluent Mandarin speaker. In fact, I think that's what she was doing mainly at GCHQ. Mm. The point here, really, Martin, is, I mean, that's a longer interview I did with her, so that'll go up on our show page at thisweek.org.uk. Which is about 40 minutes altogether, but I think she did a very good job there, you know, and I'd love to think that I could pay her to do such a thing, which is to summarise the various different groups around the world there are that are now coalescing together with doctors resisting the lockdown and actually saying herd immunity is something that is much more sensible, particularly with all these so-called false positives, although of course these things are all disputed, they're all up for grabs. One thing that isn't up for grabs is that there's loads and loads and loads of money going into vaccines. Are you looking forward to the vaccine, Martin?
Well, the Chinese are testing their vaccine and the Russians are testing their vaccine.
What about you, though?
I will make the judgment when I see what it is and who's offering
anyway,
it to
me. Anyway, the person
but of
in
course,
charge,
the public sector vaccines in China and Russia have got no money behind
well,
them at
what
all.
What about the public sector vaccine here?
It's not a public sector vaccine, that's the problem.
But
it's a private sector vaccine. It's public money, but it's being developed by the big pharma companies.
So who's in charge? Well, it's a woman called Kate Bingham. She's the UK vaccine chief, in that she's the chair of the UK Vaccine Task Force, and she spoke this week to Rachel Burden on BBC Five Live. I think it was Wednesday morning, and I just thought it'd be interesting to see what she makes of you know, the whole idea of, you know, whether a vaccine is going to do very well. And she answers some of the questions from people who were phoning in, although there was nobody really saying what the sorts of things that I would be asking her about all the massive financial interests behind them, and Bill Gates particularly, his track record in actually causing epidemics with his vaccines around the world and using them to spy for the American intelligence services and that sort of thing. So anyway, let's have a listen now to a clip from this. Again, I'll put the full version up on our show page at thisweek.org.uk of the UK vaccine boffin, if you want to call her that, chair of the British Vaccine Task Force, speaking earlier this week.
We're starting with a blank sheet of paper. We have no vaccine for any human coronavirus. So we don't have any template to follow. And as you correctly point out, there were efforts to try and find a vaccine for SARS-1, and they didn't go anywhere. Now, in part, they didn't go anywhere because the SARS-1 pandemic petered out. And so then there wasn't the same incentive to do it. Here, this pandemic is not petering out. This pandemic is gathering speed and getting more and more aggressive globally. And there is enormous global commitment to getting a vaccine. So the fact that of the six vaccines we have procured for the UK, four are now in phase three late efficacy studies, and we're only in October for a virus that we knew about in January, that is astonishing. And as I mentioned, the phase one, phase two data, where you look at the immune responses of those people who've had the vaccine, those responses are excellent. So they are generating, the vaccines are generating very strong immune responses. But what we need to see in the big phase three studies, so these large efficacy studies, is do these vaccines actually work in the people who are most vulnerable? So does it work in the elderly? Does it work in Black, Asian and minority ethnic populations? And does it work in the people with severe underlying diseases? Because we in a way, we couldn't be in a better position than we are now, but we don't have the answer to that absolute critical question, which is, does it actually protect people from infection?
Well, she doesn't actually say in that interview whether she's a member of Common Purpose or not, or anything else really much to do with her qualifications for the job. But she's saying, Martin, that we've got four vaccines in the UK which are getting close to possibly working. The other thing she doesn't address is this whole business of the PCR tests and whether they are delivering a whole load of false positives. Bizarrely, of course, you could have somebody who's tested positive for COVID-19, they take part in one of these trials, and actually they never had it at all. All they had was some old scraps of old DNA, and then if they come out of it without actually catching anything, and then they could be told, you know, the result could come through, oh well, this is a wonderful masterful cure, this vaccine has cured them, when actually there was nothing wrong with them in the first place. So there's all sorts of problems with this, not least of which is it's actually quite difficult to find anybody with symptoms nowadays of this COVID-19 that can be pinned down to it being COVID-19 symptoms in order to try these vaccines on. So, you know, it just sounds like to me, Martin, a bit like the blind leading the blind, and yet here she is saying it's all going swimmingly well.
Well, I hear what she says, as we heard from the other side earlier on. We're trying to, you know, like most of the human population, we're trying to make sense of contradictory information that we're being given by different sources. But I'll just make a point about this. The Chinese and the Russians' public sector are developing vaccines. And of course, what happened with the Russians when they put their Sputnik V vaccine, they're still testing it. The Americans put sanctions on the laboratories which had developed it on the grounds that they were biological warfare laboratories. And they're trying to squeeze these vaccines out. There's a whole other issue about whether vaccines should be developed by the private sector. And of course, if the vaccine is developed by the private sector, it would be developed for private sector
profit.
Would
you ever take a private sector vaccine?
I would be much less likely to take a private sector vaccine developed for private profit than one that was developed.
What about a Russian or a Chinese?
Well, the Russians and the Chinese are developing that. They're trying to develop vaccines. And of course, they are basically saying, if we develop vaccines, we are going to run these out for free to people all over the world, which will undermine completely Gates and Big Pharma. But of course, then we become to the question is vaccination the answer to this anyway? And you know, the more questions you ask, the more questions there are to ask.
Okay, well, if this is all a massive scamdemic crime, who better to ask about it than the former presenter of the BBC's Crime Watch programme, Sue Cook, and Anna Breese, who's also herself an ex-BBC journalist and worked also for ITV, interviewed her earlier this week. And I just thought it was fascinating to hear Sue Cook, who, of course, is not on the BBC anymore, her take on the pandemic.
Things have changed a lot since the days I worked for the BBC. I think we were much more investigative, whether it's to do with money or some kind of ethos coming from above. I actually don't know, but we would have been straight down to investigating all sorts of things. We'd have been, we don't take anything on trust. you wonder why these PCR tests are, so many people are saying they're flawed. You'd look at them, you'd look at the way they're run, you'd look at the way they're funded, you'd be a bit shocked to find that they're not NHS tests at all, it's privatised. So who is Serco? What, you know, what, and what's in it? Who makes up Serco, this company that runs the tests? Why are they flawed? Who is saying they're flawed? And in what way are they flawed? And how might that skew the results? That's one investigation. I'd like to investigate who SAGE are. Who's on SAGE? You know, who are these people? I gather they chop and change. It's not the same people on the committee all the time. So I'd like to know who they are. PHE, what is PHE? You know, who's on that and how is that funded? And I thought the government had announced that they weren't going to be talking to PHE anymore, but Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance are up there on the press conferences, so presumably they are still talking to PHE. But that's the sort of thing that I'd like to investigate. I'd like to look into all the figures. I'd like to investigate the legalities of everything. I did present a programme called Out of Court for BBC Two for 5 years, and we'd have been all over the legalities of these restrictions that are being imposed on people, the lockdowns, the fines of £4,000, which are an untenable amount of money to fine people. The lack of democracy, you know, how can these things be the law when there's been no democratic way of ratifying them? All the people who represent us, the MPs, what do our MPs think? I mean, I'd like to go out and talk to the MPs and find out what they think, get them on. But you don't see them platformed. I think that's another thing that annoys me about the BBC is the people they choose to platform and the people they don't. So I've seen on Twitter and on various other media some really interesting people like Professor Carol Sikora, Carl Hennigan, Ivor Cummins, all kinds of very interesting, Mike Yeadon, Michael Levitt. But all you see, you know, you see for some inexplicable reason, you see Neil Ferguson all the time. You see Neil Ferguson being wheeled out. What a discredited, you know, what a load of things he's got wrong in the past. But I would like to see some other people, other voices. And the other person they wheel out all the time is Devi Sridhar, who just negates everything and fear mongers and doom mongers. And so I don't know. I feel there isn't enough balance. And I don't want to give my opinions on things. That's not a BBC journalist's job at all. The job is to give everything a fair hearing and let people make their own minds up with using the facts in front of them. Any phone call I have, conversation will always turn to the media, and people will be saying, what is the matter with the media these days? It's so scary. I can't. Loads of people I know say they don't watch it anymore. They don't watch mainstream media at all. Loads of people say that, which is a real worry because, you know, how are you going to get your facts? How are you going to know what's going on if you're not watching anything at all? Everyone from the butcher to, you know, somebody else walking their dog and walking past me in the street will all say, what on earth is going on with the media? And I have to say, I felt it was such a privilege to work for the BBC when I first started working for them back in the 70s. I was just knocked out by how wonderful it was to be working for the BBC. And I've been so loyal to them for years and years, but the last couple of months, it's really, I'm afraid, disillusioned me terribly. And I've actually stopped listening to the Today programme for the first time in about 20 years. I've now listened to talk radio because I get my concerns addressed on talk radio. I don't hear people being insulted and interrupted and talked over as they do, I'm afraid, on the Today programme. I think one of the problems is we've got too much technology now. So these tests, you know, we're seeing 40,000 cases or whatever the numbers are, all these cases, but they're not actually illnesses. But I think that these tests are actually, it's only my opinion, and what do I know? I'm not an expert, but I would like to see these tests ditched. I'd like to abandon the tests, except for people in health professions and care homes and so on. But this mass testing, I think, is skewing our view of what's really happening. You look at the curve. It was the classic Gompertz curve. It peaked back in March, April. It's now crawling along the floor. And these tests, these results are just completely at odds with the actual realities of the hospitalizations and the deaths. And surely those are the figures that should count. I'd be very wary of trusting everything I see on social media. I think the only advice you can have is question everything, look at everything, find out as much as you can from all sorts of different platforms, and just try and use your common sense and see which rings true and which doesn't. Don't take anything on trust without backing it up with from another source. Well, I don't think the church has covered itself in glory in all this. I mean, where have they been? They haven't come out and said anything, whether that's because they haven't been asked by the mainstream media to make any comments. I don't know, but I think the churches being closed is tragic. I mean, not many people go to church these days, I don't think, anyway. So I don't think social distancing in a church would be that problematic. So to shut the churches, I think, has been dreadful. There are lots of scandals I'd like to see more about, like the maternity wards and people, pregnant women not allowed to bring their partner to scans. And I think there are in some places, many places, the partner either isn't allowed in the labour ward at all or is only allowed for 3 hours. I mean, how ridiculous is and difficult is that, and heartbreaking? I just think there is just so many scandals I'd like to see investigated. I'd like to see a proper investigation into the vaccination thing, because everybody's putting everything on vaccination and track and trace to be our exit from all this nightmare. But I don't think either of them are going to be the answer. The answer is, in my view, herd immunity. But I'd like to know about the vaccinations. Who are the companies who are putting this vaccination together? Who's got shares in them? Will they be mandatory when they finally get one? And if they're not mandatory, maybe there'll be something else like a mandatory certificate. If you're going to have the freedom to get around, freedom of movement, maybe you'll have to have some kind of certificate that proves you've been vaccinated. But I'd like a proper investigation into that. And because otherwise the vaccination's going to suddenly be with us, and then we're going to be taken by surprise about how to manage it. You know, I've mentioned vaccinations and the legalities of things. Care homes, like a proper investigation of care homes and what actually goes on. A lot of them, the government got the blame for a lot of the problems in care homes, but actually most of them are privately owned. So the private ownership needs a bit of looking into. Things like a lot of people, things that people are suffering with now, like not being able to, if you've got a friend or a relative who's in hospital, ill, possibly dying, you're not allowed to visit. I think I'd just break the door down if it was me, but I know of a couple of cases where people are in hospital now, and in one case their daughter, and another case the wife isn't allowed to go in and see them. I've got another friend whose mother's in a care home, and she hasn't seen her for months. She does little sort of she's taught her mother how to use an iPad, and so she can, but to have not seen your mother, your elderly mother, for about 2 months, I think is really terrible. My mother's 101, and I just decided I'm going to visit her no matter what. If I get stopped by the police, I don't care. You know, she's who knows how much time she has left, and I'm not going to have her sitting at home on her own without anybody to visit. It's just not humane.
Well, it's a bit of an old school BBC fest here tonight. That's Anna Breeze, who's you didn't really hear her, but she was doing the interview of the former Crime Watch presenter Sue Cook. Martin, do you ever get people? I mean, it's obvious that people are going to come up to Sue Cook because they know who she is, saying what's happening to the media.
Yeah, well, I mean, the media, as you know, is mainstream media is controlled. Most of it is corporate, and the bit that isn't corporate is run by the government, and therefore we've got an agenda. And then social media is a free-for-all. And, you know, you can get any opinion you want on social media. You just decide what opinion you want and you can go and find it. It's very hard for people to make sense of what's going on in a crisis like this, because there's so many different ways of looking at it, different kinds of information. And, you know, I presume people listen to this show because they want to get some kind of steer on what sort of things are important.
Well, I think, I mean, we've really become is a kind of anti-censorship show. I mean, I'm looking around for credible voices, interesting people, that, you know, who have got something to say that are not being heard. And also, of course, I like to do both sides, and we're going to do that right now. We're going to have a quick look at the US elections. Martin, who's going to win?
I think it's probably likely that neither side will have an outright victory, and it's all going to end up in the courts.
You mean like it should have done with the hanging chads back with George Bush?
Well, that was, I mean, basically, don't forget that there's a basic flaw in the US system, which is because of the Electoral College, it's quite possible for somebody to win with less votes.
So there are no flaws here?
Oh, there's flaws here as well. I mean, but there's flaws in the US system, in as I say, is that the people...
Is the US president...
That's a basic flaw before you even get to the other cheating and skullduggery that goes on.
Is the US president basically like a modern-day version of a Roman emperor?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it, it's not surprising because the US Constitution was based on the Roman Constitution. The people who drew it up in the 1770s, 1780s modelled it on the Roman Empire's Constitution.
But just like Rome, I mean, the idea is to create an illusion of democracy.
Yes, that's right. I mean, Rome was officially, I mean, obviously slaves didn't vote, but the official Roman citizens did vote, but they voted in a very controlled way so that only oligarchs could win. And there was still a class struggle went on inside the Roman Republic, which ultimately led to the Empire. And the US Constitution is designed to be an oligarch-friendly constitution.
Are there parallels? I wonder if there's parallels today in the United States with the fall of Rome.
Well, of course. I mean, this is the comparison that, as I say, it's not really that surprising. I mean, when people see all the sort of Masonic symbolism in Rome, in the US, where, you know, in banknotes and so on, that's not surprising because the people who set up the US, the revolutionary so-called, they were Freemasons and they were fascinated by the Roman Empire. So they created a system which they perceived to be similar to the Roman Empire system.
We'll be hearing a little bit about Giuseppe Mazzini, who was the mate of Albert Pike, who was the Grand Master of, he was Scottish Rite Freemasonry back during the time of the American Civil War. A little bit later, but for now, let's have the Muppet on the left. Trump first, I think.
And we just won, you know this, we just won $7.5 billion from the World Trade Organization. Just won. And from the World Health Organization, I took us out. They said, why'd you do that? I said, number one, they were wrong on everything, although they corrected themselves today and they said I was right, or the lockdowns. But I said, number two, why are we paying $500 million a year and China, which has 1.4 billion people, is paying $39 million a year? Explain that. They couldn't explain it. It was very hard to explain. So I took us out for that and other reasons, okay? So we'll see what happens with that. But these are the deals. I could go over hundreds of different things with you and just common sense. I mean, common sense, what we do. Think of it. World Health Organization. We have 325 million people. We spend $500 million. China spends $39 million. And China dominates them. I said, doesn't work that way anymore. Doesn't work that way anymore. They'll take us back in so fast at much less money. For decades, our politicians spent trillions and trillions of dollars rebuilding foreign nations, fighting foreign wars, and defending foreign borders. But now we are finally protecting our nation, rebuilding our cities, and we are bringing our jobs and our factory and our troops back home to the USA.
Well, big round of applause there for Trump down in Florida, Martin. He's not interested in having awkward questions asked during debates. This is the way they're doing it. But anyway, what do you make of his performance there? He's really talking up what he's been doing. He's saying things like the World Health Organization, we're better out of it. We were paying so much more per person than the Chinese, for example.
Well, the Chinese are a developing country, so they haven't got the same resources. I mean, if they want to leave the World Health Organization, they can leave it, but nobody else has left it. And everybody else is going to operate. The Chinese basically are going to dominate it now. And if the US don't want to be in it, they don't have to be in it.
It's really what this is about. All these big international institutions, including things like the International Athletics Federation, FIFA, you know, for football, it's like one, either the Chinese or the Americans are dominating all of them now. So the idea that they're going to be fair arbiters is almost out the window.
Well, the US has never been a big, you know, they've basically tried to avoid being part of supranational organizations. So they've tried to sabotage the International Criminal Court. They haven't signed up to the law of the sea, the UN law of the sea, even though they're trying to enforce the UN law of the sea in the South Pacific, the South China Sea as they see it, but they're not signed up to it. They're not signed up to the World Health Organization now, so they're out of that. I mean, basically, they want to do unilateral things.
I was listening very carefully.
They don't really want to be in a rules-based system.
I was listening very carefully for anything to do with foreign policy. I'm not hearing anything from Trump.
Well, yet. He said he's going to bring troops home. That's what he said.
We shall see. Anyway, I said the puppet on the left referring to Trump, and this is actually deliberate because I don't really believe in left and right. I think the whole thing is some kind of false dichotomy that that's been put to us. You know, the idea is you've got to be on one side or the other. There's fatal flaws in both sides, the way I see it. And so let's have a listen now to the puppet on the right, Joe Biden. And here he is. And this is an interesting rally. It was a drive-in rally. So you can hear when people are approving of what he's saying. I'm not sure if they listen to what he's saying on their car radios. That sounds like fun. But if they like what he says, they toot their horns. So let's have a listen to that in Las Vegas this week now.
That my plan will create 18.6 million jobs in 4 years. 7 million more jobs than the president's plan. And $1 trillion more in economic growth than the president's plan. Democrats know how to get things done. Here's how my plan works. It's not going to raise a penny in tax for anyone making less than $400,000 a year. Not a penny. And how am I going to pay for all this? I'm going to ask the big corporations and the wealthy to start paying their fair share. You realize that the Fortune 500 companies, 92 of them making billions of dollars, don't pay a single penny in taxes. It's wrong. Donald Trump paying $720 in taxes? Come on.
And a few toots there right at the end. But, I mean, it sounds actually like he's got a pretty powerful platform he's standing on there. He's saying, look, anyone earning less than $400,000, you're not going to have to pay anything. But anyone over that, these are the people that he's going to rake the cash in from.
Yeah, and he's been pushed into that by the Bernie Sanders candidacy. It sounds all right, but, I mean, frankly, Biden is a corporate shill. All this stuff has come out about his son this week and all the rest of it and dirty
deals
in Ukraine. So
what's that particularly? I mean, we know all about the Hunter Biden in Ukraine, I hope, don't we?
Yes, I'm
just... Is it more about that? Or?
Well, I mean, what's come out is they found Hunter Biden, supposedly Hunter Biden's laptop was left at a place to be fixed, and it's been Giuliani's got hold of it, and on this laptop there's loads of pictures of him taking crack cocaine and having sex with prostitutes, and also, you know, potentially fixing up some kind of deals in the Ukraine. Now, of course, the self-referential narcissism of US politics is that when they're talking about Ukraine, it's all in relation to Biden or Trump doing something which was illegal in the US. And what's been going on in Ukraine has been basically a takeover by the oligarchy in the United States in alliance with the oligarchy in the Ukraine itself. And everybody's been lining their pockets at the expense of the general population. No surprises there. I mean, basically, both of these candidates are multimillionaires, billionaires, and they've got loads of money, personal money, and they basically represent very powerful interests. The billionaire class, as Sanders was calling them, they run U.S. politics. Well, they run both sides of the aisle.
We seem to be heading towards a sort of Arab Spring in the Western world, in the Anglo-Zionist Empire, Martin. You know, if what you're saying is right, that there would be legal challenges to the presidential election, if we're going to have a great reset, economic collapse and that sort of thing. It all sounds very, very chaotic. And we know, going back to Albert Pike, this is the motto of the Scottish Rite Freemasons, order from chaos. So what they like to do is create chaos and then they all bring the order out of it, rather like Naomi Klein and her whole idea of the shock doctrine.
Yes.
So anyway,
basically.
Okay, so let's go and have a listen. This is the main feature of tonight, which is our look at Serco. And I've got to take my hat off to Lance Murdoch, who is MC Double L, he calls himself. And here he is speaking, and I was really blown away by this, last Saturday down in Bournemouth, at part of something called the Stand Up Protest, outside Bournemouth Town Hall. And apparently he's going to be back there 2 p.m. Tomorrow, doing another one, similar one. And I just think he's done an incredible job here, not only in speaking out, because, you know, he's limiting his potential career by doing this, but also by really taking out and taking down the role of Serco, particularly during this pandemic. But also, you know, we've been following them for many years on here, Martin, haven't we? This outsourcing company, which is like a giant octopus, basically taking over all sorts of roles that government used to do, but doing it for private profit. I mean, this is a conservative, you know, when I say conservative, it's a Tory project, really, because it also has conservatives running it. So let's have a listen to that now. Then we'll hear some of his music, and then we'll hear from Lance, an extended interview with Lance, about what he thinks is really going on.
The infrastructure of our entire test and trace system, the enforcement, is run by a company called Serco. Has anybody heard of Serco?
Yeah.
The Serpent Company. Right, now before I tell you about Serco, this is how it works. The law changed 2 weeks ago. If you are asked to isolate for any reason, you do not need a test, you do not need symptoms, you can get a little notification on your phone saying stay at home, and you can get £1,000 fine, and if you break the rules, you get up to a £10,000 fine. This is administered by Serco, okay? Who are Serco? Here we go.
Go on, Lance.
Right. Serco are the multinational company that employ more people than British Armed Services, 125,000 people. They've got 40 subsidiary companies across the globe. They are the largest outsourcing company in the world, and they win 70% of the contracts they bid for. They turn over £5 billion a year. Here's a short look into what they do. They cover waste disposal all over the UK, transport, half of London's traffic lights, all of Dublin's, Ontario, Canada, they issue your driving licence. In New Zealand, trains, ferries, all across the UK too. In Australia, they have a presence on every single military base. That's just in Australia. Serco are contracted to run the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. Does anybody know what FEMA is? They administer and run two whole FEMA camps worth $600 million. 17 states they run FEMA. Immigration detention centres across the UK, Australia and New Zealand. Air traffic control across the whole world. Public transport in the West and in the Middle East is dominated by Serco. That means the ANPR cameras. That means the facial recognition cameras. They run, own and maintain all of that infrastructure. They are contracted for the DWP call centres. They're the largest operator of private prisons in the UK. Who knew that it's not just the US that has private for-profit prisons? They're in the UK too, and they're run by guess who? Serco, the Serpent Company. They run every single state school in Bradford between 2001 and 2011. In that decade, kid me not, was that not the decade when the grooming, industrialised raping of young girls was most prevalent in the North East? They ran all of the schools in Bradford. Political persuasions aside, that happened, and they were in charge of every school in Bradford. Along with G4S, they are the largest contractor for services for vulnerable children. They run the infrastructure of the child protection services. They run the UK ballistic missile system and our entire nuclear arsenal. They run three UK naval bases. Serco are contracted to administer many UK hospitals. The entire NHS blood bank is run by Serco. Does anybody starting to get an idea of how huge this multinational conglomerate company is? It is the octopus. It is the snake. It is the spider at the centre of the web.
Obscene.
Serco have contracted for our high defence Skynet, i.e. Terminator 2. Skynet satellite system. Serco run that. They also run and administer the US Patent Office. They issue every patent in the US. Serco have been involved in scandals in every one of these areas. They were fined £22 million. They run the ankle tagging for prisoners. So all the prisoners in the UK that have got that ankle tag on, that's Serco. £22 million fine for charging the government for dead prisoners. Who knows about that scandal with Nigel Farage? What you think about Nigel Farage is out the window. That scandal of those immigrants that have been picked up in the Channel and been put into hotels. Guess who's doing that? Serco. Whoa. They run every single immigration centre. Guess what they also run? All of the high-speed rescue boats for the Border Force. Every single one of them is issued, serviced and ran by Serco. They are on commission to pick up every immigrant. They get £900 a pop to put them in their own immigration centres. And if they're full, guess where they go? In the four-star hotels. Serco pick up the bill and they probably double it before they give it to the government and we have to pay for it.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah, £900 a pop for each asylum seeker. A very infamous asylum detention centre in Yarl's Wood is run by Serco and it's infamous for sexual abuse and prostitution rings. They've lost lots of contracts for malpractice. In August, they got £108 million to run Test and Trace. And for the first few months, everyone was just sat around watching Netflix. They had contacted an average of two people each. £108 million we spent on that. So, who owns Serco? Serco is owned by CCL, the Crown Corporation Limited. Who owns the Crown Corporation Limited? The Crown Estate. Who owns the Crown Estate? The Crown. It's owned by the Crown. Corona means crown. Do anybody know that?
Yeah.
Corona is a crown virus. It's the virus of your highness. Okay. CCL and the Privy Council have the golden share in Serco, based in Hook in the southwest. There are two other companies I'm going to expose. They're all in the southwest too. Who's ever heard of Kinetic with a Q? Yeah. Who's driven out past Verwin, seen that big sign? Yeah. Kinetic are the cyber defense and military wing of Serco. They are also owned by the Crown. They are the same institute. Serco have an $8 billion US defense contract and Kinetic have a $9 billion US defense contract. There is also another institution of this unholy trio. Who's heard of the Purbright Institute? The Purbright Institute in Surrey was responsible for foot and mouth. They also work at Porton Down. It was started by Lord Purbright, Edward de Worm Rothschild. Linked with Cecil Rhodes and the Round Table and the Pilgrim Society. Does anybody know who those people are? Starting to paint a picture, guys, yeah? It's not just a private company. Purbright Institute owns 200-acre site with Kinetic with a satellite defence system and an underground base. Now, Purbright have the patent to a coronavirus. Who knows how many patents for coronavirus? It's in between 60 and 70. The various different strains, there are 60 to 70 patents. Purbright has the main patent on coronavirus. Guess who granted the patent? Any guesses? It was Serco, because they won the patent office. Painting a picture yet, guys? Lord Purbright Rothschild, who started the Purbright Institute, was a spiritual mentor of Cecil Rhodes, Alfred Milner, the Pilgrim Society, DERA, which is the Defence Evaluation and Research. This is the military industrial complex. We're talking about the military industrial complex. They're the progenitors of MI5, MI6 and GCHQ. It all came from the Pilgrim Society and this group of institutions. Woo! Right. They also funded eugenics. Does anybody know what eugenics is? Yeah. It's racial selective science. Along with the Rockefeller Foundation, the Purbright Institute, and the Round Table Society are involved in funding Nazi experiments. After the Nuremberg trials, they continued to fund it. They also created the idea of concentration camps in the Boer War. So we have the theme of concentration camps, eugenics, vaccines, and defense companies, all involved in this unholy trio of track and trace. Enter the Gates Foundation, our great friends Bill and Melinda Gates. Does anybody know how many shares they have in Serco and their particular avenue of private prisons? 200,000 shares, worth about $20 million. Purbright, guess where? It's got a massive office and it works with the Viral Institute, Wuhan! Surprise, surprise. Now, although Serco is owned by the Crown and the Golden Share, does anybody know who the CEO of Serco is? Sir Rupert Soames. With his brother, Sir Nicholas Soames, does anybody know who their grandfather is? Winston Churchill! 5 points for the man over there. Nicholas Soames, Rupert's brother, is best friends, literally best friends, famously with Mr. Prince Charles, Mr. Captain Reset. And, we all know. Famously, Nicholas Soames warned Princess Diana 6 months before her death to stop investigating landmines. Do you know why? Because he's the CEO of Aegis, one of the biggest military industrial contractors, which is also involved in landmines. Right, I'm now going to go down a bit of a further rabbit hole. Nicholas Soames is best friends with Prince Charles, so by default, guess who he's pictured with many times and also good friends with? Jimmy Savile.
Oh, God.
His brother Rupert Soames, the CEO of Serco, guess whose flight log he's on with his wife Millie? Jeffrey Epstein is intrinsically linked with some of these military industrial complexes through Lockheed Martin. Okay? So this little island of debauchery is actually linked intrinsically with the military industrial program, with defense contractors. It gets so deep, even I was totally blown away by what I found over last weekend. So basically, the man is the CEO of Serco, owned by the Crown, is going to administer a system that when you sign your permissions to the app, now, you know, when we have apps, everyone is so scared about the permissions for Snapchat. Oh my God, what's it going to do? What's this flashlight going to do? Can you imagine when you press I accept on the test and trace app, it comes from Serco, the biggest military industrial contractor in the world. Can you imagine what the small print says in that app? I can tell you now that it is probably, I've seen the research, it's the biggest backdoor into your phone that you can imagine. That's one thing. You're also entering into a contract where you can get a notification at any time for any reason because you've been near to someone that allegedly had a test that's totally inaccurate for coronavirus and you have to go home right now and you get £1,000 fine. Who's going to be administering it? Serco, the people that administer the ankle tags for prisoners, the people that administer mobile prisons, nuclear defence, blood banks. Is this the kind of people that we want to be entering a contract into? And they're going to be able to say to us and dictate to us what we can and can't do. Does anybody want to enter into that contract?
No.
Has a single person here downloaded that track and trace app?
No.
Good. I've got some bad news for you. I've got lots of people that contact me from various different sources, different places. I was contacted last week by a young lad who has not downloaded the app. He showed me a screenshot of his Google settings. He's got COVID-19 turned off and he still got a notification. It knew his name. And it said, you've been near an infected person, you have to isolate. And I informed him that's at risk of a £1,000 fine. He said he'd leave his phone at home. Has anyone researched the Chinese credit system?
Yes.
Has anybody researched what's happening in the Xinjiang province in Western China? They're using a social credit system linked in with the COVID-19 app that uses a QR code that is red, yellow or green. Maybe, no or yes, which dictates your entire life. That's now been integrated with the Chinese credit system, and in one province it's used to decide who goes to the internment camps, or the re-education camps as they're called. The BBC admits they have 1 million Uyghur Muslims in concentration camps that are put there digitally. Now, in Xinjiang, they're not allowed Facebook, so they don't have photos uploaded, and it's not tagged. We do this willingly. We willingly give our facial recognition details to the beast. In Xinjiang, if you don't comply, they strap you down to a board and they forcibly scan you. And once you're scanned to the facial recognition, you don't even need the app, you don't need the QR code, it's your face, a digital patch. And when it's scanned, it says trustworthy, untrustworthy, or maybe. And if you're untrustworthy, you've already got 1 foot in the internment camp. Is this surprising to anybody here, or did you guys already aware of quite how bad this is?
Some new news.
Because unfortunately, most of these poor bastards walking up and down here, some of them think we're completely insane.
Yep.
Some of them think we're just nutters that have watched one YouTube video and come to these crazy conclusions. Well, I urge everyone to listen in or to watch the whistleblower thing tonight. I'm looking to get whistleblowers on my channel. My channel is called LLMC, that's my name, that's my artist name, and the show is called Rise Above. So for everyone that's tuned in, thank you very much. For everyone that's sharing what I'm trying to put out, please do, because things are getting so close. The World Economic Forum has now said that the Great Reset happens in January 2021. Straight from the words of Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum. It's talked about by Prince Charles, it's talked about by David Attenborough every day this week in the mainstream media. It's coming. Secure your assets, batten down your hatches, make networks of like-minded people, and prepare for the storm. Guys, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Rise above.
So that's Lance Murdoch there speaking last Saturday in Bournemouth, Martin. I mean, I think there are certainly some errors there. But I mean, even if one quarter of what he's saying there is true, it's pretty concerning about Serco, effectively a privatisation of the whole government and particularly military industrial complex, both in here and the United States.
Well, it's interesting to hear what he had to say. I mean, I think possibly a lot of it needs to be properly checked. I mean, he's made various pretty strong assertions there. And, you know, people need to make sure that they're just not, you know, that there are genuine research that he's done.
I mean, some of those things he was talking about, we've covered on the show.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that these monstrous companies are a threat is quite clear. I mean, you don't need to be, that's obvious. Why, for example, should any private company be running prisons? I mean, it's normal practice in the US, and it's become normal practice here. But I mean, I think it's absolutely extraordinary that people should be making a private profit out of locking people up.
His big, implication there is that this is effectively a kind of contract fraud. The idea of privatizing these services should be being put out to tender so Joe Bloggs and anybody can tender for stuff. But actually, these people have got an inside track, so they're getting it all. It's effectively a giant cartel.
Indeed. And of course, it's not just Serco. You've got G4S and various other companies as well. And you've got BlackRock in the US, which has basically taken over running the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, even though they're a private company for private profit. This is a process by which oligarchs all over the world are taking over the government to make it pliable to their needs. But of course, he talked there about what's going on in China, and yes, there are definitely issues in China about human rights and the system that they're setting up. But it's not a Serco system, is it? It's the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, maybe Serco are copying what the Chinese are doing.
Well, I mean, everybody's doing the same stuff. Because ultimately what we're talking about here is World War III, and World War III will be organised on that kind of basis,
China,
whoever's doing it.
A little bit similar to our three-tier system where we're doing in our various regions. Anyway, three seems to be the main number that people like to use, because apparently it's big enough for people to kind of understand. If it gets, you start getting four, five and six, people just kind of lose track of it. But three, people can get their head around. Anyway, we're going to be hearing later from the Vox Pops in... Cardiff last Sunday, the day after that recording was made by Lance Murdoch there, and we're going to be hearing also from an exclusive interview with Lance after we've had a good old look at the Great Reset, because I think the Great Reset, we need to hear from the people who are doing that. Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum, who seems to be in the process of taking over from the United Nations. They've had a partnership agreement last year where, you know, many campaigners around the world are saying, well, actually, this puts the World Economic Forum in the driving seat of the United Nations now, because they just have the money to do it, whereas the UN is strapped for cash, so they're taking over the UN. It's a kind of hostile takeover bid. But let's have a listen now to some music from Lance, and this is called Rise Above. The actual music is called Don't Believe Me.
Don't believe me. Don't believe me. Don't believe me. Go study history. Go study history. Politicians, professors and scientists, controlled by some rioters. Through two world wars they've been trying it. Corporate investment, no matter who the finalist. Don't believe me? Go study history. Check the activity of bloodline dynasty. Sumer, Egypt and Rome, consistently pan-European imperial misery. World conflicts enact social change, so they want it, but we must abstain. Acquiesce and you're in for a world of pain. A workhouse where you dream of a minimum wage. That's the plan, but it's closer than you think. We'd be there now if it wasn't for the cosmic shift. They're panicking, the game is up. It's all illusion, the only truth is love. Don't believe me. Don't believe me. This goes deep cause they rewrote the history books. You can't quote how the real history looks. Empires fried from the lands they took. We're in the same boat, it's kept afloat by crooks. Been the same way for more than 1,000 years. There's no love here, all you're allowed is fear. Break through the clouds so the sky is clear. Satanic whispers hidden in the sounds of prayers. Dark suits, cold hearts, no empathy. Fill positions of power in our embassy. Stone circles and burning effigies. Chanting mantras to bring forth energies. Secret meetings that map out our destinies. Hooded figures manifest entities. Pollute our minds so we got no memory. For centuries helplessly trapped by the treachery. Don't believe me. Obelisk.
fascists and illuminated torches. Landmarks of malevolent forces. Sorcerers aim to contain your mind state. Open your eyes where you're already blind, mate. You want the truth, better ask and why. Your worldview got squeezed through a needle's eye. And here's the proof. They extinguish lives. Conflicts built on evil lies. No surprise. We don't know of no agenda. Disguised from the light from the moment you enter. Survival of flight. You're a lifelong member. That's right, since they sliced the placenta. Now, welcome to the slave race. Very few will ever find out how the game's played. Unless you wake up, keep on playing it. They look at me and think, why is he saying it? Don't believe me. Don't believe me. Don't believe me. Go study. Don't believe me. Go study history. Go study history.
Well, that's MC Double L, aka Lance Murdoch Martin. Interesting little tune, still playing out. Nice. I mean, you know, certainly he's saying here that in a way he's sort of doing what we were doing there, comparing Donald Trump to the Roman Empire. You know, he's saying actually there's quite a lot of control of history. I mean, George Orwell said something very, very similar, didn't he, about, you know, that he who controls the past controls the present, who controls the present controls the future.
Well, that's true. And, you know, people are, there's widespread distrust of authority and of corporations and the governments that they control, but you know, like everything else, it's the more you look at things, the more complex they are.
I mean, he's talking about his Bournemouth talk he did, we heard there about Serco. He finishes off really by pointing people towards this whole thing of the Great Reset. Now, mm-hmm. I suppose it would be obvious for the banksters, the global elite, to engineer, if they're going to engineer a crisis, rather like something that happened in 1929, the financial crash of Wall Street. I mean, is it possible to engineer something like that, or these things just you know, happen and run out of control?
Well, they would happen and run out of control anyway, because that's the nature of the beast. I mean, capitalism is a, you know, a scramble for profit, and therefore it's not a very, you know, it's basically an anarchic setup. But of course, there is also manipulation. And, you know, if we look at what's happened going, you know, the strategy of tension in Western Europe in the 70s and the 80s, leading up to 9/11, which then allowed, of course, the dot-com bubble had burst at that point. And what should have happened is that capitalism should have reset at that point. But they stopped it because they said, oh, because of 9/11, we got to pump loads of money into the financial services sector to prop it up. And then, of course, every time the financial services sector has crashed, they've come back in with even more stuff.
Well, what do you make of to prop it up? 1929, though, the Wall Street crash.
Yeah.
There are all sorts of different theories about that. Some saying that it was just happened, and there was, but there are others who are saying actually there was a knowledge amongst the financial elite that the stock market was due to topple, and so they decided that they wanted to topple it at the time that was most convenient for them and make as much money as possible.
Well, that, interestingly enough, I was reading about this morning. People were Trump and various of his colleagues were briefing Wall Street that the pandemic was going to be much worse than they were saying. In public, they were saying, we're not too worried about this. We think we've got it under control. In private, they were saying to their Wall Street chums, it's time to short the market. So
Does that mean they're helping them make money out of the crash?
Yeah, basically, yes.
It's insider trading.
It's insider trading, that's right, yeah. And it's so normal that it's actually, you know, it's what goes on.
Well, that's supposed to be a crime, but of course, now apparently if you're a government agency, it's not a crime anymore.
Exactly. I mean, this is the way things have always run.
But the Great Reset is certainly worth looking into, and we'll be doing that in a minute with Lance himself. But before that, I thought we'd have a listen to Sky News Australia, who's Rowan Dean has also done, and there's a much longer piece, and this is just an excerpt from it, 7 minutes long or so, where he has a really good look at the Great Reset. So here's an extract with some of the interviews with some of the big players like Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum and our very own Prince Charles.
The World Economic Forum in January 21, which will serve as a global summit devoted to the Great Reset. This summit will bring the decision makers physically to Davos, but it will be interconnected with a virtual twin summit driven by the young generation, our global shapers. They will integrate over 400 hubs into the dialogue of Davos and ensure that the Global Reset Initiative is really forward-looking and takes into account the voices of all who are left behind.
Now, put aside for the moment that that bloke looks like he's auditioning for the head of SMERSH in the next James Bond movie. He is, in fact, Klaus Schwab, the founder and head of the World Economic Forum. He is a total whack job, in my opinion, and I'll get into that in a second. He's a big fan of drones, algorithms, and the Chinese Communist Party, and he believes there's a fourth industrial revolution underway that is changing what it means to be human. And he peddles this sicko fantasy that humans and machines will somehow merge in his green utopia. Bonkers, like I said, but this lunatic has some very, very powerful friends determined to push the Great Reset button.
Now is the historical moment, the time, not only to fight severe virus, but to shape the system.
We have a unique but rapidly shrinking window of opportunity to learn lessons and reset ourselves on a more sustainable path. It is an opportunity we have never had before and may never have again. So we must use all the levers we have at our disposal, knowing that each and every one of us has a vital role to play.
Now is the time to think what history would say about this crisis. What is it that would make it so that history would look at this crisis as the great opportunity for reset?
The Great Reset is a welcome recognition that this human tragedy must be a wake-up call. It is imperative that we reimagine, rebuild, redesign, reinvigorate, and rebalance our world. Rebalancing investment, harnessing science and technology, and advancing the transition to net zero emissions, all elements of the Great Reset, are fundamental to building the future we need.
Prince Charles insists all the levers at our disposal must be used to enforce the Great Reset. How on earth that one sentence alone does not disqualify Charles from ever succeeding to the throne is beyond me. He is now not only fully immersed in hardcore left-wing eco-politics, he is advocating some bizarre form of eco-fascism. The Queen must step in and insist he have nothing further to do with this freak show. After all, we are currently seeing in Victoria just what it looks like when all the levers at our disposal are being used to enforce the COVID-19 restrictions, which include curfews, lockdowns, enforced mask wearing, shutting down of businesses, making you stay within 5 kilometres of your own home, not visiting the dying relos, and on and on. Remember, it's not me linking COVID to climate change. It is these lunatics, including Charles and the United Nations and the IMF, who want to replicate the global response to COVID and repurpose it for climate change to enforce zero net emissions. Just to remind you, this bloke Schwab is the kingpin of the World Economic Forum, the chief body that wants a globalized world with a partnership between government and big business, globalization that basically runs the show. In this week's Spectator magazine, Maurice Newman writes, already Professor Schwab and his colleagues have started mobilizing vast networks of left-wing activists. Those who scoffed at claims that climate change was a stalking horse for a new world order should think again. That reality is now in full view. Intense pressure will be applied to parliaments everywhere to pass enabling laws and to abdicate more responsibilities to unelected bureaucrats in global institutions. Crony capitalism is anathema to genuine market economies, and giving more leverage to those who encourage it is fascistic, says Maurice Newman. Schwab has written extensively about humanity being altered by machines, nanotechnology. He's a big fan of drones, artificial intelligence. Weirdly enough, Daniel Andrews recently ditched attempts to detain people on the suspicion that they might be about to disobey COVID regulations, has eerie echoes in Schwab's boasting how technologies can intrude into the hitherto private space of our minds, reading our thoughts and influencing our behavior. And Schwab predicts, as capabilities in this area improve, the temptation for law enforcement agencies and courts to use techniques to determine the likelihood of criminal activity, assess guilt, or even possibly retrieve memories directly from people's brains will increase. All of this, Schwab says, is redefining what it means to be human. Sounding like a demented character in a Batman comic, Schwab also writes gleefully that sensors, memory switches and circuits can be encoded in human gut bacteria, and that smart dust, arrays of full computers with antennas, can now organize themselves inside the body. Yep, this Marvel Comics whack job runs the world's most prestigious economic forum, and every year our corporate CEOs and business leaders go groveling to him at Davos, and worse, our government wastes your money sending senior politicians and highly paid public servants to dance to this madman's tune. It's a disgrace. Oh, and did I mention he's a huge fan of China as the leader of his brave new world?
It was really appropriate to invite the president to join us, and he, as the leader of the country, to talk to us about the future's engagement of China in global affairs and the leadership role China will assume in determining or constructing our global future.
And why China? Well, apart from the drones and the surveillance, chat to the Uyghurs about that, they also pretend to care about climate change.
And China has already taken the lead. Just look in the negotiations in Paris on the environment.
COVID, China, climate change. The Great Reset is a toxic, poisonous, ugly offspring of fascism dressed up in the frilly frocks of environmentalism. It's a horror show. So what to do? Our Governor General must insist to the Queen that Charles ceases all involvement with this travesty. The Morrison government must refuse to send any delegates to Lucerne in May, and any Australian businesses that participate in this grotesquerie deserve the full wrath of Australian consumers and shareholders.
Okay, so that's Rowan Dean on Sky News Australia. Martin, you know, very, very prejudiced, biased piece, really, one-sided against this. I mean, don't you think actually that at some point something has to give here, that we're going to have some, you know, replacement for the IMF? Because you've been saying for the last 10, 12 years that capitalism is going to crash. Now, at least it looks like the World Economic Forum, Schwab, Prince Charles, etc., have got a plan.
Well, what's going to happen is there are various plans to deal with what's coming next. And the capitalist class has got its own idea of how it's going to resolve the crisis. And that, you know, Schwab is very well connected to coordinate all of this. He's, you know, he will know the people at the head of Serco, at the head of G4S. He will know the BlackRock people. He obviously knows Prince Charles. I think the assessment of the Chinese, because you've got a very right-wing Australian commentator there, as far as he's concerned, the Chinese are just part of this. I think that in actual fact there are contradictions between what the Chinese want to do and what the Western powers want to do. That doesn't mean that they haven't got overlapping interests. I mean, that's exactly what the Chinese would say, is, look, why can't we work together?
Surely,
but in actual fact, they're at daggers drawn.
Well, maybe.
So that doesn't really fit.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I think there's quite a lot in the West that would like to have the same sort of authoritarian power, biometrics, that sort of thing, control over people's lives as they've got in China.
Yes, but of course the Chinese are doing it on their own bat because they've got their own agenda. And of course, there's some people like Schwartz, and there are elements within the Western capitalist elite that want to do deals with China, and there are others that don't. And in actual fact, there's a contradiction there, because they can't quite work out whether they want, you know, are we going to beat them or are we going to join them?
Okay, well, let's get Lance Murdoch's take on this, MC Double L, and his channel Rise Above, Double LMC. Because we have an extended interview with him now, which is about 45 minutes long, where he really goes into why he's gotten into the why he believes that there's, you know, some serious stuff going on there, and also I suppose, winding up by looking very, very closely at this World Economic Forum project. May, we just heard from the Australian guy there, but usually the Davos happens in January in Switzerland. But anyway, so here's Lance Murdoch and his take on COVID and where we're all heading.
My name's Lance Murdoch, aka Double LMC. For the last 20 years, I've been an MC in various different capacities, mainly a rave MC at drum and bass things for like 15 years. I've done, you know, presenting work, some radio work. In the last 5 years, I've mainly been concerned with combat sports MCing, which has sort of eventually taken me all over the world. That's really taken off in the last 5 years. All over the world. I mean, for instance, in July, I did a four-week stint out in Romania and Sweden with an outfit called Brave Combat Federation, which is actually owned by the Sheikh of Bahrain. So that was a very interesting experience. And I got to see what Sweden is actually like firsthand, because I spent 4 weeks in Stockholm throughout July, which is really, really eye-opening.
So what is this combat sport? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, all types of combat sports, kickboxing. I have a professional boxing MC license. I've done some work on BT Sport. Whether I'll ever get booked to work on BT Sport again is another question after I've said some of the things that I've said recently. So, yeah, Cage Warriors Northwest, lots of cage fighting events, boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai, all types of ring sports and cage sports. I am the guy that says, ladies and gentlemen, and gets everyone riled up before the guys.
So can you just tell us a bit about how you got into this, Lance?
Well, I've always been an MC. I always wanted to be an MC since I was 12 years old after listening to a Wu-Tang album, Enter the Wu-Tang, one of the most seminal hip-hop albums of all time. I decided I wanted to be a rapper at the age of 12. By the age of 18, I was on stage up in London at raves and stuff. And then for the last 20 years, mainly up and down the UK, I've been a resident at the Full Moon Party in Thailand in Koh Phangan for the last 10 years. I do a lot of work out in Southeast Asia, various different parties and raves out there. But while this has all been going on with the music for 20 years, I've also been an absolutely avid researcher into the hidden story of what's really going on in the world. Government cover-ups, false flag, terror attacks, who's really behind the power structure of the world. This all started for me in 9/11, so it was 19 years ago. So that's how long I've been looking into all this stuff. And basically, when I came back from Southeast Asia in January this year, I knew last year I'd been researching the UN and the World Economic Forum and the global reset, as everyone likes to laugh about it back then. Nobody's laughing now. Back in January, when I flew back through Suvarnabhumi Airport in Bangkok, I already heard about coronavirus, and immediately I passed it off as what I thought was just going to be a bit of a red herring, like SARS and MERS. You know, they're bigging it up. It's not really going to be anything. But when I flew back, you know, there's more Chinese tourists in Thailand, where I spend a lot of time, than all the other tourists put together. For instance, there's a lot of Chinese people there. And I watch all of the international news channels, a lot of the Asian news channels, especially the non-communist Chinese news. And as I flew back and I saw what was going on in the airport, and I got back here, I think it was the 15th of January, which I decided that this virus, whatever it was going to be, was going to be the event that tips the global economy into the grand reset. And then lo and behold, I started saying this online, et cetera, et cetera. People laughed at me. Lockdown happened. My entire calendar for the year, I have 40 shows lined up all over the UK, both music and combat sports, MMA, boxing, big festivals. Now, obviously, that all got wiped. So I had a lot of time. And the thing is, I hadn't really posted about this stuff for a couple of years because I didn't want to affect my career. I've been on BT Sport. I've been on ITV. I've been on some really mainstream news stations, and I stopped talking about this stuff. But then when the lockdown happened, after I was quiet for a couple of weeks, and then people online started asking me, like, what is going on? Like, what do you think? And I said, listen, I'm not going to post anything until I've got a better idea of what I think is going on. And I'm going to be honest with you, back in February and March, because I've been researching the Chinese Communist Party and what they've been up to and some of the atrocities with the human organ harvesting and the internment or the re-education camps with the Uyghur Muslims. I've been researching that avidly for 2 years. I was instantly really scared that this was actually going to be even worse than they said, you know, the worst type of chimera sort of bioweapon virus. And I was at the supermarket with my gloves and my mask on when nobody else was, and everyone looked at me like a nutter. But then I started to look at the stats and well, the rest is history. And then I started the Rise Above channel on YouTube. And yeah, and after that speech I made last weekend, things have gone absolutely crazy. I've been completely bombarded with emails, messages, people asking for the transcript of what I said, asking for interviews. Thank you very much. Yeah, by the way, thank you very much for inviting me on the show. Thanks very much for the opportunity.
Someone will probably want to get hold of your tablet as well, because most of the research seemed you were scrolling through it rapidly. I've never quite seen anybody deliver it so far.
To be honest, it was mostly bullet points. What happened? I'll tell you how this happened. Yeah. So I've already started my channel back in March, and I've been speaking about I've started a series of shows called COVID-1984. For anyone that's listening to this, you know why I've called it that. It's pretty obvious now. And each show, I've covered a different aspect of it. First of all, the fake inflated deaths from PHE and the CDC. I try and mirror things in the US and the UK, so I've got a broader audience. Then I looked into ID 2020. Basically, 2 weeks ago, it must have been 2 weeks, on the Friday, I saw a picture online of 9 different national newspapers. And each one of them, because I've studied media studies and advertising, there were no headlines. At all, just a picture of the track and trace with a different colour on each newspaper in this neat 3x3 grid. And that was so symbolic. It really spoke out to me, because I heard something about track and trace. I knew who Serco were roughly from garbage disposal and stuff like that. But I saw that and something just lit up in my head. And I went on a 4-day, I reckon I spent 30 or 40 hours just rapidly. I had all these preconceptions about what I thought I was going to find. And the worst thing was every single one of them was true and 10 times worse. I sort of looked, I heard Serco and I wrote a list of what I thought I was going to find, and I found all of it, and it went a lot, lot worse. So that was all of that on my tablet was all bullet points. I didn't get through most of them, and most of it was off the cuff because I don't like to read. I like to sort of, I like to flow a little bit more. But yeah, it was a pretty extensive investigation. I didn't get much sleep.
It was fascinating. And I think one of the things that you brought out, you teased out, was this link around the Commonwealth, which I think is still, and we know about the Five Eyes, don't we? And the Six Eyes, if you include Israel, as quite a lot of people do, that there is still some very, very strong links between these different crown countries, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the UK. And but the thing that I found so fascinating is you managed to pin a lot of this down to this thing called the Purbright Institute. Who are these?
They appeared on my radar back in February. I'd heard of Purbright because it's in my part of the world. Funny enough, the three companies, or not really companies, whatever they are, arms of this octopus that I've started to expose, they're all quite local to me. They're all in the Southwest. Hook in Hampshire, Purbright in Surrey, that Kinetic. I drive past a huge Kinetic like installation almost every day. They are heavily embedded around me. So I've always been aware of these companies. And I knew from my research from a couple of years ago that Purbright was essentially, I'll say it, they were responsible for the foot and mouth outbreak. They were fined heavily for it as well. And if you look on the map where the foot and mouth outbreak were, like, you can see it's just a circle, and Purbright Institute's right in the middle. So they were instantly on my radar when all this kicked off. And I realized that, it wasn't hard to find a link between the Wuhan Institute, the Gates Foundation, and Purbright. They don't cover their tracks. There's a clear paper trail. It's very, very obvious.
People think about privatisation. I mean, you know, obviously you mentioned in your talk DERA, the Defence Evaluation Research Establishment, which was privatised around 2000 and then became Kinetic.
It seems like in 1999, there was a lot of things that happened financially, and a lot in 1999 was a very pivotal year for a lot of these corporations and being privatised. I've noticed that as a year that keeps coming up.
Yeah, but the point being that a lot of these institutes are supposed to have been sort of privatized, so kind of anybody can buy shares in them around the world. We were talking on our show last week about the number of public utilities, gas, electricity, water, that sort of thing, that have been bought up by big Chinese companies. But these seem to have been sort of transferred from government to crown. And I wonder if you think it's fair to say that.
Well, absolutely. This is the thing, right? Everyone was losing their rag because they thought that Serco was a private company, and they really only went that far as making that statement. Oh, it's a private company. It's not the NHS. Well, if you really look at it, is it really a private company? because like Kinetic, Serco is owned by the CCS, which is the Crown Commercial Services. And above that is the Crown Estate. And as my research read, they still have what's called like the golden share. It's the thing that works through the Privy Council. But also, who else has 200,000 shares in Serco? It's Bill Gates, not the Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, their trust worth, I think, $25 million, particularly in the private prison sector of Serco. And that seems like a really weird investment for such a kind philanthropist as Bill Gates.
Yeah, there's something a little bit fascistic about these private prisons, certainly, because, you know, if you've got a crooked and corrupt judicial system, which it seems we're heading towards that way in the UK with the Assange trial and things like that, you can actually start stuffing your prisons with prisoners and make a private profit out of it, which is obviously a little bit dodgy. But look, can I just ask you, and take a step back from all of this, because I think for many of us, we want to know what's going on. Something is definitely not right about this. Anybody who perhaps back in April, May was saying, well, okay, this will be all right for a few months. They've now realized that it's not going to be for a few months, we're not going back to normal until there's some enormous changes in society. And one of those changes seems to be that the government is going to be able to do, and as it already has been doing, things without real recourse to parliament, or, they can change the laws really by clicking their fingers.
Yeah, I mean, like on my channel, I've exposed... I think it was the 28th of September when they changed the laws about the rollout of any type of vaccine to do with COVID-19. They've basically removed all liability from anyone advertising, producing, administering or recommending any type of new treatment for COVID-19, which would include obviously vaccines. So, like, if you look at how many millions of pounds in this country, I don't know how many it is in the US, has been paid out in vaccine damages over the years, that is like a sweeping bill. So that means that now if you have brain damage, paralyzed, et cetera, there's no comeback, there's no recourse.
If I was then to recommend a cocktail of strychnine and belladonna as a cure for COVID-19, I would be indemnified, would I?
Well, I read the document and I couldn't see anywhere in it where it actually differentiated what you could and couldn't prescribe. It basically said it took away every piece of red tape and bureaucracy, every regulation, any level of testing, any level of anything. It sort of just opened the door that you can prescribe anything you want or recommend it with no recourse whatsoever.
So what's going on here, Lance? I think this is what people want to know.
Do you want me to tell you what I think at the highest level of what's going on?
Yeah.
Okay. Like I said, back in August of 2019, I've had people that follow the markets for me, and I heard about something called the Great Reset. I knew already that for over 10 years, our fiat monetary fractional reserve lending system, which is basically money cabalistic money magic, it's fake and it can't be, and it's been artificially inflated for at least 10 years, so it has to go. I use an analogy of a hot air balloon that's going down because it's got a tear in it, but they're pumping more hot air in it to make it go up, but it's making the tear bigger, so the balloon is getting bigger but it's falling faster. So I knew the financial reset was happening, and I pretty much had been told that the smallest global event was enough to tip over the economy. Because what they want to transition us to is something that's aligned with Agenda 2030, which I've been researching for a few years, and the sustainable goals, which in a nutshell, it used to be called Agenda 21, which was much more radical. But Agenda 2030 is something the UN has sort of tarted up a little bit and made it all about sustainable developments and equality. But it's essentially the end of free movement, the end of private property. They want everybody off the land into cyber cities. Obviously, I'm generalizing here. So this Great Reset, what it is, COVID-19 is essentially a red herring. There is another coronavirus in the mix. We've had coronaviruses around for decades. There've been many before, SARS, MERS, etc. But they're using it as an excuse, I believe, from my research, to shut down the world economy systematically, to use this as a cover story to transition us to a new economic model that is based around a single digital currency, which is digital, cashless, controlled by the IMF and WEF essentially cutting out all middle and high level and obviously high street bank, that's all gone. You know, in layman's terms, it's what people have been calling the New World Order, the one world government, for a long time. And I believe that's literally what they are trying to do as we speak all around the world. Well, at least in most countries that are going along with the WHO and the UN plan. Not all countries are playing ball. A lot of African nations are not playing ball. Belarus, the president of Belarus didn't play ball with the WHO. He turned down a lot of money. What happened in 2 weeks? Huge uprising in his country. Is it the president of Burundi, 55 years old? He died 2 weeks after kicking the World Health Organization out of his country. These could be coincidences. Of course they could. But people that turned down the offer of the WHO and the plan of lockdowns and restrictions, and they don't seem to fare very well on the world stage. I mean, Donald Trump being a famous rebel against their plan, on the face of it anyway. The only guy that's sort of suggesting therapeutics like Regeneron, Remdesivir, hydroxychloroquine. That's a big one. When Trump first said about hydroxychloroquine, apparently Elon Musk, funnily enough, was actually the first guy to suggest it. I took that as a marker. I sort of had an idea that, you know, this is only a coronavirus. We've had them before. I did a bit of research. Dr. Fauci actually wrote a whole paper about how hydroxychloroquine was one of the best ways to treat coronavirus and SARS. That's back in 2005. So that's a whole other line of inquiry, another thing that Fauci should be on trial for. Yeah, it's definitely not what it says it is on the tin. It's being used as a global shutdown. And I think a lot of people now, you know, the Great Reset has been talked about left, right and centre. Prince Charles, David Attenborough, every day of the week, you can hear Prince Charles saying something about the global reset. So, yeah, this has been planned for sure.
Yeah, it's quite interesting that the idea is here that the massive bailouts that have happened, another $1 trillion or so, which has gone to the banks and the big companies to keep them going through all this. Very little of it has really trickled down to ordinary people. The actual effect has been really like a hammer blow on many small businesses, whereas big business and particularly big tech like Amazon and Facebook have basically doubled their value in the space of a couple of months.
I think what it is as well, I mean, to elaborate a little bit, it is definitely the bleeding dry of the middle class. And basically, it's a move towards putting everyone onto UBI, onto universal basic income. I think that's really the plan. Because at the end of the day, we're also dealing with the onset of the fourth industrial revolution, where there's going to be a lot of automation. So a lot of people are in the next 10 to 20 years going to be out of the job. And I think what they're doing is they're pushing it forward quickly. And what's also happening is obviously the mass vaccination program from Gavi, who have been talking about their absolute sort of religious belief that they have the right to vaccinate 7 billion people. And it seems to me very obvious that they, you know, coronavirus is a pretty crappy candidate to use to vaccinate 7 billion people with the kill rate it has had. You know, I highlighted in my speech last week about tuberculosis. The WHO says it's the world's most deadly infectious killer. You know, 1.5 million people a year, every year die of tuberculosis. There's no, there's no mass medication. There's no shutdowns. There's no masks. You know, there's so many aspects of this that you can look at to see that nothing whatsoever makes sense. The fact that it's not even, you know, COVID is not even designated a highly deadly infectious disease by our government anymore. That happened back in March. You know, yet we've still got 24/7 fear porn on the TV, systematic shutdowns of the country. I think we're going to go for a full national, I think they're going to try a full national shutdown. I really think that's what's going to happen.
Well, I mean, this week our mayor of Bristol has publicly called for powers to lock the city down, even though central government doesn't want it to happen, because in the southwest the rates have been so low. One almost gets the idea that he's sitting in his office, kind of itching to do a lockdown. So you know, we've got people in power. By the way, he hasn't been elected this year. He was supposed to be re-elected in in May, but the election was cancelled. So really, he's got his kind of his dictator year where he's not actually be elected. So, I mean, the end of the day, this is, can be quite scary. In fact, more scary than COVID is the political power, which is coming to a very few people without any checks and balances, almost like a kind of authoritarian rule. So have you got anything to say to listeners who are a bit nervous about that? I think because we kind of need a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, something to keep us going, Lance.
I think a bit of light at the end of the tunnel is that as things get crazier, more and more people are going to wake up. And the fact is that I truly believe this, that we actually have to consent to our own enslavement. At the end of the day, all of these small little ludicrous measures that we're asked to do, like businesses restricting how many people they can come in, you know, this track and trace, et cetera, we have to have the power to say no. It's about acquiescence. And I've studied the more esoteric side of what these people at the very top believe. And whether everyone else believes in that stuff or not, they do. And they do believe in the power of free will. That's why they tell us what they're going to do, sometimes decades in advance. They write it down in graphic detail. That's why some people say, how can you think you've got the power to make these predictions? I'm not making any predictions. The fact is that, you know, when these documents came out 5-10 years ago, I just read them back to front. And these people are very open about what they're going to do. But the only way that it's going to work is if we acquiesce towards it. And at the moment, unfortunately, still a good percentage of the population are still operating out of a level of fear. They're literally consuming everything that the BBC and Channel 4 and Sky News are telling them, which is 24 hours a day. Live in fear, be scared, stay at home, wear a mask, don't see your family. People think this is dangerous. I don't really care. I think people just need to ignore it. I think if you're vulnerable, yes, you can isolate from this new coronavirus that we've got in the mix of our seasonal flu. Because at the end of the day, it's getting lumped in with seasonal flu. They've changed the reports this week. Soon what they're going to do, it's very obvious, for years they're going to continue to just do it with flu season every year. And we'll have a 6-month lockdown until in 3 or 4 years' time we're on our knees. So what everybody needs to do is start speaking the truth, stepping up, refusing. And when people say, why are you refusing? You say, it's not because I'm ignorant. It's not because I'm selfish. It's because we're being lied to. And I'll tell you what, I think that there's a very high percentage of people that are still playing along with it, i.e. wearing their mask, walking around outside, not seeing their friends and family. I think they're doing it because, not because they really believe that it's as dangerous as they've been told. I think people can actually see through the lies, because the lies about what's happening are very, very obvious with just half an hour, 45 minutes of cursory research. But the problem is that most people don't have the urge to do that extra little bit of investigation past what they're being told from the TV. And that's a real problem.
Well, so I think
that's why I'm being more vocal. That's why I'm trying to step it up and increase.
I think it's also because the fear works. You know, so a lot of people they're basically hit. It's almost like an undercut. It's straight to people's subconscious. So, they're telling you, look, if you don't do this, you know, you're either going to get fined, you're going to get criminalised.
My granny's going to die. You're going to kill my family. When I was speaking in the street last week on the PA system, and none of us had masks. We were saying something about, you know, we're trying to avoid tyranny, etc. And someone screamed, I don't want my whole family to drop dead. And I sort of, you know, and I replied with, you know, I don't want future generations to be digitally enslaved to a techno-fascistic totalitarian AI system, you know, or something. I didn't go quite that deep. But the thing is, when you're dealing with that level of fear response, I don't want my whole family to drop dead. It's almost like fear has been turned into a virtue. So between people that are, you know, dying into it and, berating other people that are living their lives and breathing fresh air, they turned being fearful into a virtue. And that's a real problem. But like I said, I think everybody has an inroad. Everyone's got a little open door. Everyone's got a seed you can plant, and it's different for everybody. Maybe it's losing their job. Maybe it's seeing their elderly relative deteriorate because you can't visit them and thinking how ridiculous it is. It'd be better to see them than to see them wither away, you know. But unfortunately, I have a feeling it's going to get a little bit worse before it gets better. But I've seen what's happening in Liverpool, and it gives me some courage, I think. I'm quite happy about what's happening in Liverpool at the moment.
Now, you were saying you looked into this ID 2020. What do you make of that? Something which popped up very early on? Bill Gates was talking about this.
Yeah, basically, I started looking into this last year when I was I've been on Bill Gates's tail for like 5 or 6 years. I never trust him. It's like Jimmy Savile. As soon as before I knew what a paedophile was, I knew he was a paedophile when I was a young kid. I just knew he was not right. I've had the same feeling about Bill Gates for as long as I can remember. So I started getting on about 6 years, and I started researching the digital quantum dot tattoo that he was developing. And I flipped it and I was like, whoa. And this was back start of last year. And basically, I've looked into ID 2020 a lot, and not many people know that it's already happened in Africa. There are already 6,000 people, I believe it's in Ghana, that have a patch on their arm, which is like, it's like a transfer, but it has hundreds of hypodermic micro needles in it. And it puts nano dot ink into your arm as it administers a vaccine. So they might have vaccinated them for anything. I don't know. It could have been any excuse, but it's got a payment system in it from MasterCard. They can access government subsidies, energy tokens, etc., and they're already doing it. And ID 2020 is the people behind it are Gavi, which is Gates, Microsoft, which is Gates, the Rockefeller Foundation, which we all know who that is, MasterCard, and a whole host of other subsidiary companies, most of which are also Gates or Rockefeller. It's also intrinsically linked with Agenda 2030 and what's called data enabled vaccines, which is one of the absolute key things in the health section, the sustainable health section of Agenda 2030. They want everyone to have data enabled vaccines. So I was like, what the hell is a data enabled vaccine? So basically, yeah, a data enabled vaccine is something that, you know, people talk about a microchip, but it's the size of a grain of rice. That was old technology in the 90s. Now we're talking about literally nanotechnology. That's not science fiction. They have nanotechnology and they can put it in this infrared ink and it has your vaccine record in it. And it, you know, you can access MasterCard payment system with it. So it's got technology in it that could do anything a microchip can do, but it's of a nano size. Now whether we're going to start seeing this patch used, the funny thing is this patch was actually developed for children. So children that are scared of a needle would have this transfer and they could put a picture of a superhero on it or something. But these 400 hypodermic micro needles obviously have far different abilities to a regular hypodermic needle. So yeah, ID 2020 wants to give 1 billion people digital ID, which currently have no ID. So everyone in the third world, it looks, will be the guinea pig for this, as is already happening in Africa. But basically by 2030, by their own words, everybody would have to have this digital ID. Now, the funny thing is, when I looked into this, there was a parallel between Serco, because the companies that were involved in producing the trust stamp, this hash system that scans your face from a single photo and gives you an individual hash, they were also heavily involved in the penal system and control of inmates in the private prison system in the US. So when you talk about track and trace, ID 2020, digital immunity passports, when you look and you follow the money, what you're going to find, 9 or 10 times out of 10, is the companies that are administering the technology and the infrastructure are involved in private prison systems and basically the penal system, as is Serco. So, well, you know,
I mean, that's fascinating, because we're also seeing, aren't we, right across the world, the discrediting of elected governments. So the idea really is that people are believing less and less in the point of voting because they, you know, they can see that the governments aren't really performing. And so in the end of the day, you've got these corporations, these mega companies, these transnational companies waiting in the wings to really take over their role.
Yeah, it's like they've always been there and they've always really been in control. It's like I exposed in, I didn't really go into it in the speech. In my presentation on my YouTube channel, I really go into the detail about what Serco controls. And it's no exaggeration to say that, like, I mean, out of Commonwealth countries, it must run at least 50% of the military installations and hardware and technology and, you know, the immigration service, the prison. It's absolutely mind-boggling. You know, if you talk about like the Umbrella Corporation from Resident Evil, Serco is a very, very, very good candidate for a real-life version of the Umbrella Corporation.
Well, okay, so we've talked about the policy, you know, the crystal ball gazing, which we might call intelligent guesswork, maybe. But yeah, what about the spiritual? What about the spiritual side of this? Because obviously, the one thing that really can keep people going is a belief in something better, in the human spirit, God, or whatever.
I will say this, without going too deep into my own personal spiritual beliefs. I believe that the reason, it seems to me that this is being rushed, and it also seems to me that it's not going to plan. In Event 201, Bill Gates predicted, and all of the simulations, Event 201 is one of five simulations that's happened in the last 15 years involving a respiratory pandemic, right? And they always envisage in their plans that in the first 7 months, it will take out 20, at least. That was in KDEC. In Event 201, Bill Gates predicted 66 million people. A number that keeps coming up, along with 33, funnily enough. So it seems to me that whatever plan they had, because these people are depopulationists, they definitely wanted to, they need to cull the population to get us all into the cyber cities for Agenda 2030. There's no way there's room for 7 billion people. So I think that something has gone wrong. And I think that there is also another group of global elites that aren't quite on board with murdering loads of people. Because at the end of the day, in this Agenda 2030, there's probably no room for this whole class of millionaires and billionaires. If you're not on board with the highest level of the technocratic fascistic dictatorship, you're probably just going to be lined up against the wall like everybody else. So I do see a kickback. I do think things are happening behind the scenes. I do think that there is a split, the first time ever, in what seemed to be sort of like a monotheistic cult that was behind what's going on, because there is a big, big spiritual aspect. There's a reason that certain numbers keep popping up in what we're seeing. The rule of six is not just the rule of six. It's six people, 6 feet, 2 meters apart for 6 months. That's the rule of 666. 33 is a number that keeps coming up a lot at 66 as well. And this got asked of me in the speech, why? And I said, you know, whether people want to believe it or not, at the highest levels of the WEF and the UN and the WHO, these people are occultists. Whatever you believe about occultism, these are dark occultists, and they do believe in things like natural law and the power of numbers and symbols, colors, frequencies, special dates. And I feel like this is being rushed through because I feel like they're trying to clamp us down, because at the end of the day, if everyone takes in 7 billion people an RNA gene editing vaccine and you have a digital pack, that's a Bible prophecy. And I don't care what anybody says. And I'm not a Christian. I study many different world religions. So I don't necessarily follow any of them. But there's definitely a lot more going on than just a pandemic, than just a political overthrow, than just a global financial reset. There's also huge astrological alignments and lunar cycles that are linked into this as well. For instance, not many people know that this month is there's a blue moon this month. It's very rare. It's roughly every 36 to 40 years. The first moon was on, I believe it was on October the 1st when Boris announced the rule of 666. And the actual blue moon is on the 31st of October, which is also Halloween, All Hallows Eve. And I have a feeling, and I'll make a prediction, I don't care if I'm wrong, but I have a feeling we may go into a full lockdown by the 31st of October. But I feel like these people are rushing, and the more it gets crazy, and the more obvious that they're fudging the figures by mixing it with the flu, the more reports of empty hospitals, the more whistleblowers from the NHS, the more doctors speaking out, people are going to realise what's happening. I really don't think people will accept this vaccine. Some people will, unfortunately, but I don't think everybody else will.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? The way they've managed to kind of keep this going through the summer without any real increase in the numbers of people dying of anything, really.
Yeah, I think that's what the masks were for.
Bringing it through to the next flu season. So all of a sudden, December, it's going to be flu season again.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's seen. It was just last week where Public Health England announced that as of this week onwards, the 8th of October onwards, or last week, they're officially mixing the flu reporting with COVID-19. And they have a new category called ARI, acute respiratory infection. So we have to be really careful now, because when we start to report numbers, are they going to say it's COVID? Because they've stopped saying that. They've already said corona cases, which is very sly, because as we know, coronavirus is rhinovirus is cold. Yeah. But now what we need to see is if they're actually reporting this new ARI, because ARI contains corona, COVID, flu, and allegedly a lot of pneumonia cases would also be in there as well, because people that die of flu or pneumonia, it's very interchangeable. So, like, you know, the thing is, you can look at their own stats. I usually always quote ONS, Office of National Statistics, because they seem to be the best. You know, PHE change their stats every week because they get caught lying or getting it wrong. So as far as I'm concerned, they can continue doing what they're doing, exposing themselves, blatantly lying and mismanaging. And more people are going to wake up, and hopefully, you know, we go down the road of Germany where we have millions of people protesting, refusing to wear masks. And I hope Liverpool set an example to the rest of the country, to be honest.
I picked up what I think are a couple of smoking guns. One is the shutdown in France in mid-January of chloroquine as a potential cure. The French government actually saying, I think it was the 15th or 16th of January, taking it off the list of medicines that you could just get over the counter. You couldn't from that date. And then also the stocks in the country all supposedly disappeared. This is the one thing that could have saved tens of thousands of lives, potentially.
There's
anyway,
a lot of blood in somebody's hand regarding hydroxychloroquine. A lot. You know, I think it was actually that French professor, Didier Raoult, who was the first one. He's a bit of an eccentric character, which probably didn't help. But he was the first one to actually write the whole report on hydroxychloroquine. But the thing is, people only need to go back to look at Dr. Fauci's own report from 2005 to say that it was the best therapeutic for SARS, which essentially
it's interesting. So they knew this. I mean, this is really almost like evidence of a malice aforethought. Yeah? So the other thing is the enormous amount of, I mean, we were reporting on it when we were on FM in Bristol back last year, sort of September time, of bringing in legislation to mandate vaccines. Now that happened in Italy and in Germany and in China last autumn. So, you know, you do wonder, don't you, whether this has been in the pipeline for some time.
They also had the trial run of the first level of mass vaccination in, guess where, in China. Three guesses. Wuhan. It's kind of crazy, right? Because, like, the whole bat, the bat soup and the wet market thing is so rubbish, man. Because by their own admissions, yeah, that bat comes from a cave in Yanung, which is quite far away. And by their own wet market admissions, they don't sell that bat at the wet market. Someone's saying it also could have come from a pangolin. It's like, yeah, but there's also a level 4 viral containment lab 20 kilometers away. Accepted $3.5 million through Dr. Fauci to move their coronavirus vaccine research, which involved bats, which is all heavily documented by their own admissions. That's not the leaked stuff. That's the official documents of their research into basically using this bat coronavirus. And I can never pronounce the word. It starts with an A and it's got T's in it. It's a word that they do something to the virus to basically make it more virile, so they can test the vaccines on it, and they can have the test cycles be shorter because the vaccine produces quicker. So by their own admissions, $3.5 million was invested in that very research to produce these hybrid chimera coronaviruses taken from a bat from the cave in Yanon, and to create vaccines on them for existing coronaviruses. So it's a pretty rubbish cover story as to why you would be creating the vaccine for a coronavirus that hasn't been bad since, well, you know, SARS and MERS wasn't exactly a huge global problem.
What do we expect with this great reset? I mean, they've got Davos in January. We've also had this agreement signed last September, I think it was, between the UN and the World Economic Forum, effectively for a partnership agreement. So that, you know, you've got the World Economic Forum, which has been kind of meeting up in this snowy alpine setting for at least a couple of decades in a January, which is, of course, when nobody can go and protest like we all used to go down to the, like, the Eurotop summits, you know, the G8 summits and protest. You can't do that at Davos, and you'll freeze to death, you know. So, but anyway, what do you think's going to come out of that? Well, what can we expect?
Here's the thing, like, for a long time, everybody had their eyes on the Bilderberg Group, and by all intents and purposes, you know, the Bilderberg Group was, you know, the think tank behind the all world governments and the highest level elites. For me, what the Great Reset means is they call it stakeholder capitalism. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that's supposed to mean, but to me, it sounds like it means it's capitalism, which is owned by huge stakeholders. You know, average people in normal capitalism that can have a business, they don't sound like stakeholders to me. So it's, you know, it's also linked in hugely with the Green New Deal. And it was always the way that these world elites were going to do one of two things. A nuclear war in the Middle East through the Zionists, or the, you know, saving the environment from us and, you know, Agenda 2030. It looks like they've gone for the latter.
Or both.
Well, both, yeah. But, you know, thermonuclear war hasn't happened. I think the idea is that something has to happen, some terrible global event, before we will be herded into the cyber cities and we have no private property and we live like, you know, all the dystopian sci-fi futuristic films that we've seen, all those mixed together and worse. Because, you know, I've read all the papers and I've read the articles that they, you know, the article of A Day in the Life in Agenda 2030. I own nothing. The house I live in doesn't belong to me. Someone else is in another room using this room to do that. You know, in the house that you live in, someone has just walked in and started using a room to do something because you don't own anything. You know, travel's restricted. We don't ever leave the cyber city. 95% of the Earth's surface is left for rewilding. So it's basically, you know, we're talking about a whole global digital cyber city gulag where, you know, they're painting it as some sort of, full scale luxury communism, you know, where you have everything you need, but you don't have to work, you don't have to pay for anything. But the scary thing is, you know, and again, this is something I exposed quite early on this year, I think in February. Bill Gates has a patent with the numbers 2020 and 666, and you can Google this, it's true. And when you Google this patent, the patent is for a device which is an interface between a human body, which mines cryptocurrency based on the electromagnetic reactions from the human it's attached to. So what this means is, once you've lost your job because of the fourth industrial revolution and you're sat there at home with nothing to do, you can wear this patch and you can essentially sit there for hours consuming media, watching adverts, and based on your reaction from adverts, you can mine cryptocurrency with this device that's linked to a blockchain owned by Microsoft. So as soon as I saw that, I said, well, that's what everyone's going to do afterwards. When no one has a job anymore because everything's automated, or so they say this is what it's going to be. Obviously, these are their predictions. You'll be able to sit there just on your ass, basically watching vacuous adverts and commercials all day. And it'll be, you know, the same as they farm our information from Google and smartphones on our reactions of social media. But this is talking about an actual physical biometric implant that mines cryptocurrency. And I thought, Jesus Christ, you literally couldn't, you know, I said it in my video, a sci-fi writer would get an erection over something like that. That's so farcical. I couldn't believe it was true. But lo and behold, Bill Gates has the patent.
I suppose, you know, the way money operates is, you know, you can use it as a lure for people to pretty much do anything. I mean, people don't really seem to use morality as a value very much anymore. Most of what they're thinking about when they're making decisions about their life is to do with, is this going to actually bring me some cash in so I can survive or not? So that what you're suggesting there is that, you know, you can say to people, well, you know, you can make a bit of money by sitting and watching adverts.
Well, you say money, but what it will be tokens that will more likely only be redeemable through the network from which you've harvested
some sort.
Yeah, credits. So it's like, you know,
This is the ancient Egyptian form of currency. This is what the ancient Egyptians had. You didn't have any money as an Egyptian citizen. You had a credit with the Egyptian authorities, basically. So we're going back to that sort of system.
Yeah, well, basically, we're also going to an exact, almost textbook episode of Charlie Brooker's Black Mirror, where everyone is in this futuristic world, and I think they're on exercise bikes all day, watching TV to earn their credits, wearing Lycra.
Okay, Lance.
I don't think there'll be any Lycra in Agenda 2030. I don't know.
All right. So, and it's also interesting, isn't it, that we had Agenda 21 and we're just about to move into 21, and then 2030 takes over. There seems to be quite a lot of kind of coded language in all of this. Look, have you got anything to sort of say to cheer us up, to think that humanity might actually make it through this without being enslaved?
I think that. At the end of the day, right, the yin and the yang has a white and a black for a reason. It can't go all the way black. The pendulum has to swing all the way back. The universe won't allow it. I think the very reason that we're having this conversation and the people are thinking this all around the world is that enough people know what's going on. And I think what's going to happen in the future, if I was going to look to the brighter side, is I think that, unfortunately, I think certain countries are going to go for this. And what's going to happen is that other countries are going to break away. Maybe in the future we might have some sort of softcore Mad Max sort of techno scramble. I've looked at the Rockefeller plan, and they have a four-way axis. So the axis that they're going forward on is called Operation Lockstep. Top-down technocratic digital control, quarantine, etc. But there's four other options. One of them is called Smart Scramble, and one of them is called Hack Attack. And they involve total decentralization of power. People using different cryptos, different forms of trade to interact, people scrambling for different technologies to solve problems. There's some conflict in there as well, but I think we're going to go back to basics. I don't think they're going to win. People, even the most asleep people that are totally alien to any of this exterior knowledge, it's going to come to them and it's going to hit them in the face. So I have a saying. At some stage, everyone has to take the red pill. It's your choice. It's much better to willingly take it with a glass of water so it goes down nicely. If you leave it too late, you will always have to take it. But if it gets administered to you against your will, it's not going to be so much fun. So, yeah, I'd say please, everyone, check out my channel. What I try to do on my channel is present the information in a way that you could give it to someone that has never heard of this alternative way of looking at things before, what's going on. But it's also going to give a bit of an insight to people that have already been looking into this as well. So I start easy and then I tend to take it a little bit deep, and I'm just doing my best to wake people up. I don't know what I'd, I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I didn't, to be honest.
Now, one thing I'll just add to that is a bit of a sort of caveat and a warning, is that one thing for sure about the global elite, the people, the oligarchy, really, you could call them, is that they like to control both sides of the chessboard. So they're very good at creating movements that seem to be, against the establishment, but actually.
Absolutely.
So just be very careful, folks, in any part, sort of movement that you're part of, be absolutely confident that it's not one of these kind of controlled oppositions. So anyway, Lance, thanks ever so much. Double LMC. We're going to finish
double LMC on YouTube.
Sorry?
I was about to say, on YouTube, I'm the word double, L, and MC, and the show's called Rise Above. I also make music. There's music videos on there, and I do not talk about anything apart from these subjects, as I have done since 2016. A lot of the music on there is from 2016 when I started talking about this.
So when did you write the song Don't Believe Me?
I actually wrote that 10 years ago. I recorded it last year, and I made the video in lockdown in a disused naval base. I broke into it.
Well, we're going to hear it now. Do you want to just tell us what's the inspiration behind it before we hear it?
Basically, it covers all aspects of a different hidden history of the world, and it's basically, if you don't believe me, go and study history. Check the activity of bloodline dynasties. It's all about history. It's all about the occult forces that are controlling us. It's quite a good, it's quite a fun tune as well. It's not too serious or dark, so it's enough for anyone. But yeah, check me out on YouTube, double LMC, Rise Above. Yeah.
Lance Murdoch, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tony. It's been an absolute pleasure.
So that's Lance Murdoch there speaking to us earlier this, or speaking to me earlier this week. We're not going to hear that song right now because we heard it a little bit earlier. Don't believe me. But Martin, he's really showing there that he's, I think, got a real depth of understanding of, essentially what he's talking about is a kind of system which is all ready to go, which is going to enslave humanity if we're not careful.
Well, I'm definitely of the opinion that there is an attempt to enslave humanity, and it's great that people are questioning what's going on. But, the answers are still complicated and messy.
So, thanks very much again to Lance. But we're going to go now to look at appearance over in Cardiff last Sunday, which was one of the stand-up protests, and I was absolutely gobsmacked to see so many people there, something like 300-400 people as I came around the corner next to the Welsh Parliament, and I gave my little talk, which you can find online somewhere, no doubt. Maybe I should stick a link up to it on our show page at thisweek.org.uk, which was mercifully short, about 15 minutes or something. But I did actually, while I was there, spend quite a bit of time going around the crowd, talking to some of the punters that had turned up from all over, mostly from South Wales, about why they were there.
My name's Alistair. So, yeah, my take on it is I think that potentially they've rebranded the flu, to be brutally honest. Look at the flu cases for 2020 so far. I think they were 347 cases reported from the Office of National Statistics in the data this year. There's normally around 10,000 cases a year, so where have those gone? It's a completely disproportionate response, and it's obviously clearly part of something far bigger. Far bigger is the Tula control. And I think economically as well, there seems to be an agenda to transform the economy on the back of it. Some people talk about the Great Reset being the main reason for doing all of this, really. So something to maybe look into is something called the Great Reset. Some people say that the ultimate agenda is to have a one world government and complete police state dictatorship and a cashless society. So a lot of that has been constructed under the guise of climate change as well. So they're kind of both aligning, the pandemic is aligning with the climate change agenda as well.
Massive scam, massive agenda. We're just under attack. It's just tyranny, it's a police state, and it's just getting worse. It's just going to get worse unless we stand up to them.
And the farm was safe and effective, I have one word for you. Thalidomide.
Hiya, I'm Meg. So I've come here today because I don't agree with what's occurring at the moment. I think in Wales we're under draconian law, and I feel as if, for example, I'm a student, and at the moment in halls there's police patrolling every night. In hazmat and full PPE, and they're scaring all of the young students who have just joined university into submission. They're not allowed to have parties or even social gatherings within the same building, and they're even going into people's flats and putting social distance stickers on the floor of people's flats within the same household. Two doors down from me, police were called on some friends. The police were called, and four occupants of this household, once everyone from the party had left, there are 10 people in total just having an evening in together, and the police were called, and the occupants are fined £200 each. We have to wear masks now in the shops, and I feel for those who are exempt. They are scared to leave the house because they are constantly challenged about wearing masks. They're told to put them on, they're forced into doing it, and first of all, you can't leave the house without wearing a mask to go to the shops. What's the next stage? Is it going to be vaccines? You can't leave the house unless you've got a vaccine. It's one step to another, and it keeps getting more and more intense.
But what about the virus?
The virus itself, well, when you look at the cases in comparison to deaths, the thing is, it's got a 92% survival rate, and the only people who are dying, the main age group, is 80 plus. It's not a case of the average everyday person. Actually, Chris Whitty, in the beginning of lockdown, he was giving a press conference, and he said that a very small minority would die of this virus. He said most people would get the virus and get over it. The small majority of that being the 80 plus age group and those who have pre-existing health conditions.
How are students generally reacting to all this?
The majority of them want to comply just to have an easy life, especially with things like TikTok and Instagram being very left-wing, very on board with the mask, making masks cute, making them fashionable, making them part of accessories and making this whole situation like a bit of a fun, bit of a joke. Like, that's fine, but I feel they are our future. We've got to make them realise that what they're subscribing to is completely draconian. Having someone tell you what you're going to wear on your body and then potentially next having someone tell you what you have to put in your body, because it's happening. They're working on a vaccine and Matt Hancock wants to roll it out.
Your sign you've got here, singing, dancing, band. Are we ruled by the Taliban?
It's actually a sign.
Well, that rhymes. Well done.
It's actually a sign that my friend made, so I can't make the credit for it, but she needs, obviously, people to hold them up. So, but I do agree with this statement. I mean, this is the thing. Like, this is, I think, highlights the most important thing. We are quite jolly people. We're British. We're ultimately, unapologetically, humorous, fun-loving people. We've got satirical sense of humour, and we love a good sing-song. We love a dance. We love going to gigs. We love going to pubs. We love socialising. We're social people. Like, especially in Wales, everyone loves a chat, you know. Singing, dancing, that's what I used to do in school. Like, now the kids can't do it because their germ patterns will be in sync, you know. This is what is happening in primary schools. They're not allowed to sing and dance. And I remember I used to sing hymns in primary school. I used to be in the school choir. And those things are so good for children, music and dance and just being close. Like, what happens if a child falls over in a playground? I used to want a hug if that happened to me. Now, you know.
Where's it ultimately going, do you think?
I believe it's taking us into the next stage of existence in modern society. I think what's occurring at the moment is a front for, I don't want to say the New World Order, because I feel like it brings in all of these satanic Illuminati connotations, which is a whole different kettle of fish. But specifically with this virus, if you think about it, everyone uses their phones. Everybody is completely online now. You have to do, I'm doing my university course completely online, and I'm actually, my course is completely practical, which makes absolutely no sense. I'm a chiropractic student, so this is very difficult because we can't do practicals, and it's actually physically hands on another body, so it doesn't happen anymore. And we have one in-person lecture, but it's a lecture. We're sitting in a lecture hall, all 2 metres apart, and there's only 20 of us per group, and everyone's on their phones, you know, because we have to do the sessions on our phones, and we have to, everyone's paying on their phones, paying on their mobile phones and their credit cards. We're not having that contact anymore. We're going into a cashless, personless. I do believe that technology serves us for a good purpose, and it is wonderful, but at the end of the day, we don't need to be separated. We're creatures of community, and in a tribal setting, humans have always been creatures of community, and now we are isolated. There are 18-year-old students that this is their first year of university, and they're in a room on their own, and they're not allowed to mix with other people. They're not allowed to see their friends. They aren't allowed to have that sense of community that you need so desperately when you're
trying. Do you find there are some young people that want to catch it?
I would happily catch it. I've had the flu twice. I'd happily get, you know, add another one to my collection. Why not, you know? They know how we tick.
Well, this lockdown is a complete and utter hoax. I'd like to say that the RT-PCR test, that was created by Kerry Mollis in the 1980s, and he won the Nobel Prize in 1993 in chemistry for his discovery, but he put a caveat on the RT-PCR test, not to be used for diagnosing contagious diseases, which is exactly what the state are using to diagnose COVID-19.
So how is that affecting the figures that are coming out and the news coverage?
The RT-PCR test collects your DNA, your cells, your bacteria. It's then sent off to a laboratory to be magnified. Now, you need perhaps 10 cycles to get the magnification of a positive, but NHS and so forth are going way beyond that. They're going up to 40, 45 cycles. With that, you will find everything that you would ever want to look for in a RT-PCR test. And they're not looking for COVID-19. They're looking for a genetic sequence based on your RNA. They're looking at 9 primers, and if they can find a match, which is just below 80%, then you are deemed to be positive. Just below 80%. Now, bear in mind that we are 97% match with chimpanzees, but I don't think we're monkeys, are we?
You're suggesting these tests are a colossal fraud.
Absolutely, 100%. And you need to go further and look into the false positives. If I said to you that the government's false positive rate was 2.3%, which is a medium over various data that they've collected, 2.3% false positives. 100 people tested, you would think in your mind, and mine until I saw the algorithm being used, that 2.3 people out of 100 would be falsely tested positive. But that's not what they do. Let me give you some numbers. If they're using 10,000 people as an example, then 1 in 500 people are testing positive for the COVID virus test. That means 20 people from 10,000 prove positive. But they build in their false positive of 2.3%. Now, 2.3% of 10,000 is 230. Added to the 20 that were positive, you now have 250 cases, but only 20 that were tested positive. And the chances of dying from being diagnosed as positive, if you're over 70, is 0.26%. And dying under the age of 70, 0.04%. So we are being scammed with the figures big time.
You seem to have a lot of detailed knowledge about this. Are you a professional interest in it, or have you just been swatting up?
Just a lay person that's kept his ear to the ground. That's all.
My name's Rhys, and, I just think at the end of the day, I speak for a mass majority of people out there who I personally speak to in my business, work colleagues, friends, family. And the thing is just the numbers just do not stack up with this. Whether you're a conspiracy theorist or not, it's irrelevant because the numbers don't stack up. There's 98% of us on this planet, and this thing is only affecting a very small percentage of us, yet our government is shutting down the economy, risking jobs, risking people's mental health, making people destitute, you name it, cancer treatments, the list goes on, you know, child abuse, you know, domestic abuse, the whole thing throughout these lockdowns are affecting people massively for a very small percentage of people. And we just got to get on with it now, in my view. I'm just seeing what I'm seeing on the media and everything, you know. I got my own business, it's affecting my business, it's affecting my livelihood. I'm not the only one on my own with this. I know other business owners, I know millions and millions of other people out there who are going to be losing their jobs, becoming destitute, and people are just starting to question this now.
How has it affected you then in your livelihood?
My actual livelihood, I've got my own business. For 16 weeks when we had the lockdown, I had very little income support off the government, and because of these localised lockdowns, my customers cannot come into my business because I have a big catchment area for my customer base. So it's affecting me. And the thing is, my priority is to make sure I keep jobs safe and I keep my staff safe.
Have you been doing stuff online? Because that's what they're suggesting, isn't it?
Well, unfortunately, I'm a hairdresser, so my thing is limited to personal contact. So all you can do is be safe, make the measures, be safe. I get that. And we've done that. But yet they're trying to screw us even more. They're trying to stop us from doing our job. And
so where do you think this is all heading?
I don't know. I think that's the thing that I'm most frightened of, really. I think, you know, once again, now we've just seen it up in Scotland and the north of England. They're shutting pubs down. The hospitality sector's getting smashed to bits now. It's just frightening. That's the thing. I don't know where it is going, but it needs to stop. It needs to stop.
The lockdowns that are put in place at the moment are all based on a test that doesn't work. 93% inaccuracies, they've actually said that on the news. How can they make rules on something that doesn't work? It's affected my business. I've had to close my shop down. I do massage. People are afraid to come for a massage now, so it's massively affected me.
Have you had help from the government at all?
Yeah, we've had some help, but no, that's just bribery to me to keep quiet, like, you know. And people just don't realise what's about to come with the economy. I think it's all part of the Great Reset, mate. The economy was going down the pan before this disease, and they just conveniently got this disease to blame it on now, so they don't blame the bankers.
How's it gone down in Wales, all this? Because you've had to do quite a lot of locking down, particularly here in South Wales.
We're not happy at all. Like, I mean, making people wear these masks as well, it doesn't work. Like, they say it's like asking a fly not to fly through a fence. These masks are ridiculous. Like, even if you cough, you still cough through the mask. So then saying it doesn't spread
you know, stops the spread of it. It's bullshit. You know, the case, it's a case demic now, it's not a pandemic. We've got loads of cases on a test that doesn't work. 93% of the time it doesn't work. He said on the news that it's just 7% accuracy, it means 93% of the time it doesn't work.
So do ordinary people like you and I have a chance against the government, the system? It's an international thing.
We just got to have civil disobedience now. When they're making rules that don't make any sense at all and actually damaging us, you know, the amount of deaths the actual lockdown is causing now is far outnumbering the actual COVID deaths. And when you put people with COVID-19 in a place where all the vulnerable people are, which is a normal hospital instead of an isolated facility, what do you expect? That's a no-brainer. Common sense. It's just common sense has been robbed by all these politicians. It's not been robbed. They just give themselves a £3,000 pay rise. No, it's just ridiculous. Like, you know what I mean? We're all struggling. They just spent £12 billion on a track and trace system that's run on an Excel spreadsheet. Where's that money gone? It's not gone on that track and trace system. People are pocketing money. And that's what this is about. How can I sell CBD? Yeah? And these people now, they're interested in vaccine companies. They're telling people you can't go back to normal until you had a vaccine. That's like me telling people you can't go back to normal unless you had a bottle of CBD. They've got financial interests. They should never have any financial interest on decisions that affects the whole population, especially when it comes down to health. And they're giving themselves no liability with it as well. I'm going against what all the scientists are recommending as well, no? The scientists are recommending no more lockdowns, you know what I mean? The lockdowns are killing people. There's a massive backlog of cancer patients and all the other patients as well. We've just made the decision now that COVID patients are more important than cancer patients. And the cancer patients, 94% of them are over the age of 80. The cancer patients, they could be kids, like, you know?
Do you find that you're one of the only people that's saying this, or do you think there's a general sense of disquiet?
No, there's definitely an awakening happening now. I was the only one for a while, but now there's a shared load of people that's talking the same thing now, and before long this crowd is going to, I'd say, 10 or 20 times itself in the next couple of months, because people are just tired of the bullshit, they're tired of the lies. They just want their lives back, their lives.
My name is Mark Elliott. I'm here because, basically, you know, this is a fraud. The whole thing's a complete fraud. You know, I've been researching this for the last 6 months, and a lot of things I've been suspected down the years on my research is actually real, and this isn't. This is all planned. That's why I call it a pandemic. Actually, look at my T-shirt. It says scandemic on there. I've never denied there's people not dying. People die every day anyway. I've never denied that. But with regards to a virus, you know, it is what it is. Yes, there's been something. People have died. And actual fact, it's been and gone in May anyway. What these speakers are saying on the stage has now become a case demic. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're testing more people, you know, natural common sense tells you end up with more numbers. So there's a very clever little switch of words about 2 months ago on the mainstream media. It went from deaths, because they weren't any, to cases. Now people are still buying into that. And another word they were using is with coronavirus or COVID-19, rather than of coronavirus. So a lot of people were dying of different causes, and they were marked down as COVID-19.
Where are we heading, and what is that wider plan?
It's the New World Order, isn't it? You know, and it's like the New World Order is actually set out, isn't it? It's set out by the UN. It's the Rockefellers. It's people who are actually behind the scenes of running the whole world, have been for years, with money controlling us, and we've been led along a garden path. We're not really paying much attention to anything. All this has been going on. If you've got an inquisitive mind, curious mind, which I've always had, and you ask questions, you get answers. That's what we learned everything as kids. And I've always had an inquisitive mind, and I've always thought, well, hang on a sec, that doesn't seem right. Do you know what? An actual fact, if it doesn't feel right, just your gut instinct, it generally isn't right.
Yeah.
This is why we're here today, is to actually to waken people up to actually take some action to stop where we go in. Because if we don't stop where we go in, we're going down the wrong path completely. Planet depopulation, limited travelling, you know, it's all going to be controlled by these elite people, basically. I do believe there is another force at work which is trying to offset that. Basically, we've got a battle going on between good and evil, basically, and I don't know about you, but I would want good to win rather than evil. That's what I stand on it, to be honest with you. You know, I think this whole COVID thing is a setup for something else.
What?
Well, yeah, it's control of people, depopulation of the planet.
Okay, so that's, quite a lot of vox pops there, Martin, but this is the crowd, obviously very biased in one direction, but you can see there's quite a lot of passion there, people who are prepared to, you know, risk fines and all sorts for going down to a protest outside the Welsh Parliament.
Yeah, and, there's quite a lot of, there's a lot of distrust of authority, and quite rightly so. I mean,
to what extent do you think people are being steered in the direction of a controlled opposition, or rather than actually understanding what's going on and coming to their own conclusions?
Well, I think what's happened about this is that the narrative that everybody was buying into is like some of the people there were saying, well, to begin with, it seemed that we were being told something that made sense, and we all bought into it. But we've gradually, some people were skeptics from the very beginning. Some people have become more skeptical as time's gone on, and clearly, whatever happens now, we ain't going back to normal. Normal is finished, and there's going to be a massive economic crisis. There's no doubt about that. And as one of the people said, this economic crisis began before the COVID crisis began.
So is this a sort of beginning of the end game?
Yeah, well, we're reaching the inflection point.
What do you mean by that?
After World War One and World War Two, you've got things like the 1929 crash. You've got World War Two. We are at a similar inflection point. There is now going to be a struggle for hegemony in the global economy and in the global geopolitical situation.
So is it going to be a kind of Great Reset or a world war, do you think?
Well, I mean, Great Reset is simply a project of the powerful. And of course, they're dressing it up. You heard Carl Schwab earlier talking about, well, we're going to have lots and lots of young people involved. So it's not just us billionaires. We're going to have lots of tame young people
to tell us what we're doing. Marvin Rees and his young parliament, parliament here in Bristol, lots of young people tapped up to come along who are basically, pliable.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's going to happen in those terms is all of these people that go on about the Great Reset and about climate change and all the rest of it, I feel like screaming from the rooftops, the banks are bust and we're about to go to war with Russia and China.
Several people there brought that up.
That's why, I mean, people are starting to question lots of different things, and that's a good thing.
And it's good to see, isn't it, that they're down in Cardiff, they're picking up all sorts of different perspectives on it and able to actually decide which direction they think things are going. I did have a quick word with the police, a very quick word at the end, and they were saying effectively they thought it was reasonably well organised. So that was quite nice to hear from the South Wales Police. One of their unofficial spokespeople, who you're going to hear from now.
It seems okay to me, but obviously loads of people come in the fences, which will be dealt with at a later date. So obviously we're here to make sure everyone's safe. There's obviously issues there.
So that was a very quick clip. He didn't really want to say much, and he rushed off. But one of the most interesting people I spoke to there was talking about what he believes is actually an enormous amount of test fraud. So in other words, people being sent positive results where they can't possibly have been positive. So let's have a listen to that now. And his main appeal here is for other people who had similar experiences to get in touch with us, get in touch with him, see if this is more widespread than he's experienced personally.
My name is Keith, and I'm a therapist. My wife is a school teacher. A friend of hers in school, one of the teachers, decided to apply for the test. On the morning, she was unable to attend due to the fact that the car wouldn't start, and about 14 days later received a communication to say that she'd need to self-isolate because she had tested positive. I've since heard of six other exact cases where the people had applied, and for a variety of reasons, they were unable to attend because of work commitments, etc., and on all the cases, they'd said they'd be tested positive. On one occasion, one of my patients, she said that a friend of her father's, his wife had a letter to say that she tested positive and she had died 2 years ago.
Well, that's just
silly talk, pop talk.
It's based on personal experience. And if this goes out to other people, I would ask them, have they had a similar experience?
Where do you think we're heading with all this lockdown stuff?
Well, as everybody knows, this is based on fear. We're heading towards compulsory vaccinations. I personally would say there are 75 million reasons not to get vaccinated, because that's how much the British vaccination compensation has had to pay out to the people that have died, been injured or permanently damaged through the chemical contaminants in vaccinations. This year's flu shot, by the way, contains dog kidney cells. Dogs naturally harbour a form of the coronavirus, so anybody that's had the flu shot this year will automatically test false positive for the coronavirus this year. Professor Carl Hennigan in the Centre for Evidence-Based Medicine in Oxford recently stated that in order to test for the efficiency of a virus or a vaccine, then you need to look at the error rate. This government has refused to say what their error rate is. And he has postulated that the error rate, if the error rate, is as low as 0.1%, given the fact that there are no more deaths or very low admissions to hospital, then at least 50% of all those tested will be false positive. Dr. Mike Yeadon, who's the former chief scientific advisor for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, has said if the error rate is 1%, then they're all false positive. The other person that I would really listen to is a wonderful lady that I met in Trafalgar Square on the 29th of August, and she is called Professor Dolores Cahill. She's a top epidemiologist and virologist, and she has worked for the Max Planck Institute for 20 years. She's also said that if anybody is concerned about their health, to take some hydroxychloroquine, 200 milligrams, one or two tablets, which coincidentally cost 10 pence. It's been tested by over 500 doctors in this country with a 99% cure rate.
Okay, well, not the BCFM politics show fact check. Actually, no, apparently it's 50 pence, not 10 pence for a tablet of chloroquine. But Martin, this is a pretty interesting allegation, evidence we're getting from this chap. He's saying that people are getting positive tests when they haven't even been tested.
Yeah, because the test and trace system is an absolute scandal, isn't it? It's basically been, they've scammed loads of money out of the taxpayer, and they've not done the job that they claim to be doing. So there's plenty, you know, there's wide understanding of that, whatever your views about coronavirus.
Here we've got the possibility of companies like Serco, whoever's running these centres. In fact, we've had a scandal, I believe, this week as well, where people who are completely unqualified were being employed in these labs. There's an article in the Independent, coronavirus health and safety breaches at testing lab. The watchdogs found material breaches in five areas at the coronavirus lab, handling 40,000 tests a day, which doesn't sound like you're going to end up with getting accurate tests out of a place like that. One of the whistleblowers there says at the induction he felt he was surrounded by people who didn't know anything about biosafety or handling infectious pathogens. These people don't realise they're in harm's way, and it's quite easy and straightforward to train them. They're not, and this is what is so deplorable. So they're not being trained, these people. He said he saw a complete overloading of the biosafety cabinets, and when you do that, the airflow has nowhere to go. They had racks full of tubes plonked right in the front grate, and I saw that numerous times. So people were getting no protection whatsoever. I'm convinced they were putting themselves at risk of infection. They didn't know it because they haven't been properly trained. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? If people are actually getting infected in these labs, then they could be also contaminating the tests. But there's no actual checks being done on this. It's called the UK Bio Centre that runs this particular, I think it's called Lighthouse Biosafety Centre. So partly because this has been privatised, this whole thing, this is all considered commercially confidential, and it can't be scrutinised.
Yeah, well, I think whatever your views on what's happening with coronavirus, the fact that Dido Harding, whose husband is a Tory MP who's on the record of saying he wants to get rid of the National Health Service, has been put in charge of so-called NHS Test and Trace, which is now being run for private profit, is absolutely, and of course that's the sort of thing that's going to happen. They've actually trained, you know, you've got local authority test and trace teams already in place who've been talking to people for years about catching AIDS, about catching, you know, stuff like that, and they've not been used. Although now, of course, they're talking about, well, they're going to give some of the test and trace activity to local authorities as part of the deals they're trying to do with northern mayors and so on. You feel like saying, well, why didn't you do that from the get-go? I mean, the obvious place to run test and trace from is from GP surgeries, for example. Why aren't GP surgeries?
That's a very good
this?
Question. This place I was talking about in the Independent article is the whistleblowers who worked at the Lighthouse Laboratory in Milton Keynes. Basically, they thought the place was unsafe, so they left. And just to think that the results that are coming out of this place can mean an absolute cascade of problems for people, for example, that they have to isolate, and the people they've been in contact with for the past week or whatever have to isolate as well. And if they don't, they get whatever it is, £1,000 or even up to £10,000 fine.
Yeah, I mean, basically it's stable door horse bolted, isn't it, with a lot of this stuff. I think the real test is whether we've got more hospitalizations and more deaths. And I think that is moving in the wrong direction, which is what's making people, you know, that's what the mainstream are saying. It's moving in the wrong direction. What can we do to stop this?
It's creeping up, certainly, but it's certainly nothing like that enormous great lump when we had this back in March and April. Anyway, Martin, I think we've just finished now. We haven't really got time for Gaddafi and Mazzini. I think because of the stuff we've been talking about tonight, let's go for Mazzini. And so here is Webster Tarpley, the author of one of the best books, actually, on the September the 11th attacks. If you can remember what it was called, Martin, can you?
I've forgotten the actual name of it.
I can't remember right. But I'll tell you that afterwards. But Webster is, we went round on a tour, didn't we, with him back in around about 2006, all around the country, giving talks about the 9/11 attacks. And one of the things that was superb about him is he realised that actually George W. Bush was being threatened on 9/11 as well, by Dick Cheney, his vice president. So here's Webster Tarpley talking a bit about Giuseppe Mazzini, the alter ego of Albert Pike, organising, apparently, revolutions and three world wars.
Under Lord Palmerston, England supports all revolutions except her own. And the leading revolutionary on Her Majesty's Secret Service is Giuseppe Mazzini, our first stooge. Now, Mazzini has concocted a very effective terrorist belief structure. Mazzini is a Genoese admirer of the diabolical Venetian friar Paolo Sarpi. Mazzini's father was a physician to Queen Victoria's father. And for a while, Mazzini worked for the Carbonari, one of Napoleon's Freemasonic fronts.
What about those suitcases I put in that ice cream, sir?
Then, in 1831, Mazzini founded his Young Italy secret society. Louis Napoleon Bonaparte, today's president of France, sent him articles for his magazine. Mazzini's cry is, God and the people, Dio e popolo, which means in practice that the people are the new God. Populism becomes a kind of ersatz religion. Mazzini teaches that Christianity developed the human individual, but that the era of Christianity, freedom, human rights is now over. From now on, the protagonists of history are not individuals anymore, but people, understood as racial nationalities. Mazzini is adamant that there are no inalienable human rights. There is only duty, the duty of thought and action to serve the destiny of the racial collectivities. Liberty, says Mazzini, is not the negation of all authority. It is the negation of every authority that fails to represent the collective aim of the nation. There is no individual human soul, only a collective soul. According to Mazzini, the Catholic Church, the papacy, and every other institution which attempts to bring God to man must be abolished. Every national grouping that can be identified must be given independence and self-determination in a centralized dictatorship. In the coming century, Mussolini and the Italian fascists will repeat many of Mazzini's ideas verbatim. Mazzini thinks that each modern nation has a mission. The British would take care of industry and colonies. The Poles, leadership of the Slavic world. The Russians, the civilization of Asia. The French get action. The Germans take care of thought, and so forth. For some strange reason, there is no mission for Ireland. And therefore, Mazzini does not support the independence of Ireland. There is, in fact, only one monarchy which Mazzini supports, because he says it has deep roots among the people. You guessed it, Queen Victoria. Mazzini preaches an Italian revolution for the Third Rome. After the Rome of the Caesars and the Rome of the Popes comes the Rome of the people. For this, the Pope must be driven out. Mazzini has tried to put this into practice just last year. In November 1848, armed Young Italy gangs forced Pope Pius IX to flee from Rome to Naples. From March to June of 1849, Mazzini ruled Rome and the Papal States as one of three dictators, all of them Grand Orient Freemasons. During that time, death squads operated in Rome, Ancona, and other cities. Some churches were sacked and many confessionals were burned. For Easter 1849, Mazzini staged a monstrous mock Eucharist in the Vatican he called the Novum Pascha, featuring himself, God, and the people. During that time, Mazzini was planning to set up his own Italian national church on the Anglican model. The defense of Rome was organized by Giuseppe Garibaldi, who had joined Mazzini's Young Italy in the early 1830s. But a French army sent by fellow stooge, Louis Napoleon, drove out Mazzini, Garibaldi, and their supporters. Lord Palmerston said that Mazzini's dictatorship in Rome was by far better than any regime the Romans have had for centuries. Right now, Mazzini is here in London, enjoying the support of Lord Ashley, the Earl of Shaftesbury, a Protestant fanatic who also happens to be Lord Palmerston's son-in-law. Mazzini's direct access to the British government payroll comes through James Stansfeld, a junior lord of the Admiralty and very high official of British intelligence. Last year, Stansfeld provided money for Mazzini's Roman Republic. John Bowring of the Foreign Office is another of Mazzini's patrons. He's the man who will start the second opium war against China. Bowring is also Jeremy Bentham's literary executor. John Stuart Mill of India House is another of Mazzini's friends. Mazzini is close to the proto-fascist writer Thomas Carlyle and has been having an affair with Carlyle's wife. Now, one of Metternich's henchmen once said that the Palmerston policy is to make Italy turbulent, which is bad for Austria, without making her powerful, which would be a threat to England. Mazzini's role in Italy has been that of a marplot, a saboteur, a wrecker, a terrorist, an assassin. His specialty is to send his brainwashed dupes to their deaths in terrorist attacks. He hides out and always succeeds in saving himself. Mazzini travels readily on the continent using false passports, posing as American, an Englishman, or even a rabbi.
Well, I'll put the complete final version on the podcast of Webster Tarpley. The actual book he wrote was called 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Made in the USA, which we, amazingly, Martin and I, back at whenever it was, 2007 or so, went around the country with Webster to about eight different venues, staying in a city for one night, rather like Piers Corbyn, I suppose, is doing now with his stand-up protests. We ended up, the very last event was in Edinburgh, and we'd had 2.5 boxes full of his books, and the very last person in the queue got the very last book in the very last box at the end of the last talk, which I thought was rather sweet. So, thanks to our guests at Irish Republican Labour activist Martin Summers. We're hoping to have a councillor on next week. We'll see. Also, of course, to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Download our MP3s and you can listen in the car or anywhere you like. You'll find this show's podcast, story links, comment page and our contact details at thisweekoneword.org.uk. Like Craig Murray and many others, I'm shadow banned on Twitter, but I'm still just about there, at Tony Gosling. Have a relaxing and enjoyable weekend. Sunday noon, we're rebroadcast on the Richie Allen stream at richieallen.co.uk, apparently, and we're also on Q Radio as well. I'll put some links up to that on our show page and to the Richie Allen show too. Do please join us for the Politics Show live stream at 5 o'clock next Friday. God bless. And don't let the banksters get you down.
you. I wanna take the breath that's true. I look to you and I see nothing. I look to you to see the truth. You live your life, you grow in shadow. You'll come apart and you'll go blind. Some kind of night. Your darkness. Close your eyes with what's not there. Fade out to you. Strange. They